It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Alex, and yes, Jason are here because we are, of course, all waiting with bated breath to see what Apple will announce on Monday, our final speculation coming up. And we'll talk about what words I'm going to be looking for in the keynote. Then we'll talk about Jason Sudeikis and the end of Ted Lasso. Plus, your money's coming in that $50 million butterfly keyboard settlement. Stay tuned. Mac Break Weekly's next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 872, recorded Tuesday, May 30th, 2023. Anatomically correct fossils. Listeners of this program get an ad-free version if they're members of Club TWIT. $7 a month gives you ad-free versions of all of our shows, plus membership in the Club TWIT Discord, a great clubhouse for TWIT listeners. And finally, the TWIT Plus feed with shows like Stacey's Book Club, The Untitled, Linux Show, The Giz Fizz, and more. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit, and thanks for your support. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show we cover all your Apple news. Joining us, ladies and gentlemen, the canonical panel, the panel of my dreams, Mr. Jason Snell from Six.
Wake up, Leo, wake up, it's a dream.
I'm dreaming. Jason will not be here next week. I can't imagine why not.
I have been summoned to the mothership. What are you talking about?
He's been summoned to the mothership. You know, in other contexts, that might mean these are the end of days for you, but...
Yeah, put on your purple ponchos, everybody, and a new pair of sneakers.
Get the Nikes out. We're summoned to the mothership. Also, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Andy Inako from WGBH in Boston. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. It's going to be fun, like on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, like the week after the event, to see which analysts and writers and podcasters have pink eye, because they're all people who got to try like the same like VR headset. I think that's going to be my marker.
It's the, you know what? There's going to be a shortage of antibacterial wipes in Cupertino next week. That's what
bring your own. Oh, for God's sake.
That's my prognostication. And the OG breaker, ladies and gentlemen, Alex Lindsay of Office Hours Global. Hello, Alex.
I'm wondering what they actually do for that. You know, like it's going to be, because you know that it'll be someone had, there's probably meetings for the last 6 months on just that one thing.
Jason, you know, probably knows from headphones like the Max, the iPod Max Pro. Did they wipe them down?
Well, those we didn't get until they were out.
Oh,
and what they did is they gave you your review unit and had you take it out.
Yeah.
They're like, it's this one's yours, which they can't do for this one. But I imagine Andy was talking about the shortage of antibacterial wipes and all that. I'd imagine there's shortage in the Cupertino area because they've all been purchased and or Apple, maybe they designed their own.
They're going to be designed. They're going to be
bacterial wipes.
I'm betting on some sort of like a toilet seat cover. Like you just get your own individual, like over your face before you put it on.
Right. It's slightly sticky, so it sticks to your face, and then you put it on, and the crinkle. Ignore the crinkling.
Okay, Jason.
The crinkling is not normal.
Make sure you remember to take it off before you go on CNBC afterwards.
And that'll save it. If they do that.
Oh, man.
I beg you.
I'm going to put it in the Hall of Fame with those COVID masks.
Yeah.
Designed COVID masks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are
one?
Nice.
Do you have an app?
I have one of those, yeah.
I never got one.
They're okay.
These are at the Apple store.
It's weird, but yeah.
They're the ones at the Apple store.
Did you save it in the pouch?
They're like, we can't give you one.
You can sell that.
I have one in the pouch, and I have one not in the pouch that I wore. I know it's not.
That's your retirement plan.
Yeah,
I know. It's a shame. But I'm prepared for the next wave.
As a podcaster, one must have a retirement plan. Sock it away. You know what I'm socking away? And I have to thank Jameson for this. You know, the Steve Jobs archive, this is all online. This is Make Something Wonderful, Steve Jobs in his own words. Jameson, who I don't know, sent me this. And I looked, and you can't buy it printed. It is the contents are on the Steve Jobs archive. And they printed a few for special people, which Jameson must be.
It went to Apple employees. And it also went to Pixar and all other Disney, is my understanding, employees got it.
So maybe he works for Disney.
Because Bob Iger was really happy about it. So yeah, I got from listener YM, who works at ABC, sent me one.
Oh, how nice.
Which is awesome. But yeah, they're real rare, and they're going on eBay and all of that. But if you've got a friend who works at ABC, you might be able to get them.
Very expensive on eBay. But I will never sell this. Some really wonderful. This is, yeah, I mean, you could read it online, like I said. But there's some really great stuff in this. All of this was created by Lorene Powell Jobs, his widow and close friends, to kind of preserve Steve's legacy, you know, and it's interesting stuff like this. Do you have an over the shoulder or should I hold it up? Which would you like me to do? This is a memo on a Pixar notepad. A little note says, Steve, President Clinton is holding. Is that one. And then Steve sitting under the Pixar lamp. I don't know if there's a forced perspective there or if that actually is a giant Pixar lamp.
Oh, yeah. It is a giant Pixar lamp.
Oh,
a
you
giant
know.
Pixar ball.
Yep. Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. That's hysterical. I would hope it wouldn't squish you. Here's Steve very happy with Minnie and Mickey. I wonder why. One of my favorite parts is a series of memos from Steve, between Steve and Andy Grove. Did you read those? Anybody?
Yeah.
They're really, oh, there we go. Now we have it. You know, I'll have to show it on the web though, because you can't really pick up, the book, but it starts with an engineer from Intel. This is while Steve's at Pixar. Let me see if I can find it. Saying, hey, we'd like to share information so we can make our Intel processors better. You guys really seem to know a lot. Oh, you have to. It's an e-reader book, or you could get it on Apple.
No, there's a web version. It's a beautiful web version.
Is there? Oh, yeah, there it is. Read now. Sorry. So the Intel engineer says, you know, hey, I'd like to come over and we can have a little meeting. You could tell me all the secret stuff you've learned about graphics, to which Steve says, you know, we put a lot of energy and time and money into that. How much are you going to pay me? To which the engineer says, well, I was just thinking of an information exchange. We're not going to pay you anything. Never mind. And then Andy Grove, the chairman of Intel, sends a note to Steve saying, hey, Steve, you know, when we got together, I shared stuff with you. It may be not as valuable as the graphics information that you've learned at Pixar. But, you know, I felt like the open exchange of information was kind of part of this, and that, you know, it seemed reasonable that, you know, you would participate. There's Steve outside the IBM offices giving him the finger in 1983. Not a good move. And then Steve says, and this is what's amazing, I was wrong. He says, you're right. You're absolutely right. I've changed my position 180 degrees. And he ends up saying, come on over, engineer. Let's talk. Really, really an amazing exchange and a different kind of Steve, to be honest. You don't expect him to say, I was wrong. I'm going to change my position 180 degrees.
This is a story you hear from the people who work with him closely, though, is that he would be vociferously on one side of an issue, but the moment you convinced him that you were right, he would be vociferously on the other side of the issue, as if he thought of it himself, in fact.
Yeah.
But like, I think, and they want to reinforce that in the Steve Jobs archive. That's what they're trying to do, is bring out these
other
sort of documents that reinforce that aspect of Steve Jobs, that once he got convinced that he was wrong, he didn't hold on to it. And it is, I mean, we can talk about all sorts of weird traits that Steve Jobs had and the ones that might not make you want to work with him, but this is a really good trait of his, which is the moment he was convinced he was wrong, he just let it go and said, okay, I was wrong. And so many people never do that.
Yeah. There was a really great story. In one of the anniversaries of the original Mac launch, they had like the entire like Mac team. I think this was at a Mac Hack a long, long time ago. But Bill Atkinson told a story about Steve. Like, well, you know, we're pinching pennies trying to like get all these graphics primitives. He's the guy who did all the graphics routines for the original Mac OS and the original ROMs. Like, we just desperate to get all this code to fit. And then Steve comes in my office and says we should have rounded rectangles as a type. And I said, well, that's a waste of time. This waste. And then he took me on a walk around the neighborhood and pointed out license plates and traffic signs and billboards and all the places where there are rounded rectangles in nature. And then and he convinced me that, you know, that we absolutely have to do that. And then there's a warm like applause. Oh, that's, you know, that was Steve. And I forget who was on the panel who said, yeah, what you don't know is that I used that exact same walk to give in Steve of that, like just 2 days earlier.
That's great.
Hey, he absorbed the lesson. Exactly. And he took it in and regurgitated it. It is really a wonderful book. The print version is not out, but you can download it. It is free on Apple Books. It's a free on the Libby app. If you have a participating library, or you can just download it from the site or even read it on the site. It's really cool, I have to say. And Jameson, I don't know you, but I love you, man. Thank you for sending me my own copy of this. It's cool to have it in book form. Really, really neat.
I know. I hope they release like at least a paperback version of it, because there's something tangible about paper that when people go to a library, they see things on the shelf. When people go into your house, you know, your guests over, when you have family members in there, they see something they can take down off of a shelf. I think it's an important enough book that I hope that that it becomes a paperback. I would easily pay money for this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could download it and print it at Lulu or somewhere and get a pretty close facsimile. I'm sure this was true. Just in time printed. Jameson does rub a little salt in the wound. His note saying, love Twit and all your shows. Windows Weekly is by far my favorite. You really knocked it out of the park bringing Richard, and he's great. I love the cohesion you three have together and laugh so hard at all Paul's witty humor. He doesn't mention Mac Break Weekly at all. Maybe he was trying to get rid of this book. I think maybe that's the truth.
I don't want this. I'm a Windows guy.
MacBreak Weekly listeners are not giving that book away.
That's exactly right. You know what? That is exactly right. And I don't blame you. I don't blame you. All right. You all act as if we are for sure going to see a nerd helmet, to use Joanna Stern's lovely colloquialism, on Monday. You know, Glenn Fleischman has been to offering bets saying we may see it, but they'll never offer it for sale in 2023. He said, not this year. What do you guys think? Jason, you feel like you will be wearing a nerd helmet next week this time?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's happening, because I think fundamentally, if everybody believed it was happening and it wasn't happening, Apple would have leaked it somewhere to diminish expectations, and Apple is not doing that.
I think we'd see a Wall Street Journal article saying, exactly, they got it wrong. Everybody got it wrong. Yeah,
according to people familiar with the matter. Yeah, exactly. And instead, I do think Glenn has an outside shot at being right, in the sense that this sounds like a product that is not going to be ready until the fall, or, you know, late fall. And once you're in late fall, you're in December. And, you know, what we always, back when I did a space podcast, we always used to say end of year is next year. Like later this year is next year. It could be that's the case with the headset too. But I think they're going to announce something. The question is just sort of what the ship date is. And will they even say by the end of the year, or will they say later or coming soon or something vague like that? And also the price is the same thing. I don't think they're going to announce a price, because they don't need to, because it's nowhere near shipping.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the people who want this are going to spend whatever they got to spend for it. They know it's not a consumer item. And if all these little trickling bits of information that we would expect to be hearing right about now or last week about confirming that this thing is happening has happened. Like, for instance, a lot of writers and bloggers who talk specifically and exclusively about AR and VR have received invites to the event.
Yeah.
That's pretty much a slam dunk.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the public version of this is probably late 2024, late 2024, early 2025.
More than a year from now.
Yeah. So when we're talking about they're releasing something, he may be right that they're not going to release a commercial version, but they're going to release a developer version. And that developer version will probably ship before this end of this year or spring of next year. They want people to, but I think that I think that the commercial version is still a solid 12 to 18, maybe 24 months out. But they need people to build content. They need people to build content. They need people to understand it. They need people digging into it. And so I think that if they can sell a couple million units and get that really key gamma testing, beta testing, gamma testing out there, and give the developers time to make sure that this is a crisp platform. What really has damaged these platforms in the past is public releases without great content. You know, you put them on, you get to play Robo Recall for, you know, 3 hours, and then what do you do after that? You know, and almost everything else after that is kind of dorky, you know. And so I think that they're going to come out. I think we're going to see a lot of content, a lot of partners out of the gate. They're going to show everybody, hey, look at all these people that are already using it. You don't want to be left behind. Buy the developer one and start making content for it, because this is the next thing, you know. And I think that that's where they're going to probably jump into it, but they're going to give the developers a solid year and a half to work on it.
All right, Apple historians, is there precedent for this? Has Apple ever released something that early and said, you can't buy it, we want developers to try it, use it, develop for it, and we'll see you in a year and a half?
I don't know if there's ever been precedent for this
level.
Well, I mean, not Alex is saying that for this level, and I think he's right there. But Apple has released several times a developer kit. They did it for Apple Silicon. Right. They did it for Intel. There was the transition kit. It was actually like a Mac Pro case that had before they were selling Intel's okay. Macs, yeah. And before they were selling Apple Silicon, they had it for developers. The difference this time is, this product, by all accounts, is a product that anybody will be able to buy. And so when Alex describes it as being a developer kit, I don't think it will be phrased that way. I think that I don't think Apple is wired that way to say this is just for developers. I think they hope that some early explorers will also buy it. But I do think it'll probably be a de facto development kit because it's so expensive.
Here's from ScooterX, the Wikipedia article on the developer transition kit. The name of two prototype Mac computers made available to software developers in the transition to Intel. And then in the transition to Apple Silicon. So, yeah. So in 2005 at WWDC, Jobs said, this is a development platform only. This is not a product. It will never be shipped as a product.
They made you send them back.
It's just for you guys to get started and develop it. You know, I can actually, you'll have to return them by the end of 2006. We don't want them floating around out there. These are not products. I can see those exact words coming out of Tim Cook's mouth or whoever for this headset. So that's what, I guess that's the only disagreement here. That's kind of Glenn's feeling is like me that, well, I would say Apple will say this is not what the product's going to look like. This is there won't be a battery in your pocket. This is not the consumer product. This is a breadboard for people who want to learn about XROS and want to develop for it. And we'll see you in a couple of years with an actual consumer product. That makes sense, actually.
I think a lot of that makes sense, particularly if you go to the point of they want to be able to simply correctly. They want to be able to dismiss a lot of questions about usability and about its convenience as a consumer product. One of them being that, oh my God, Apple would never have an external battery pack. Well, Apple did, but this isn't a consumer thing. This is to get this thing out the door. I think it will be a lot more polished than like a breadboard prototype or anything like that.
Well, they've been making them. I mean, according to all the sources, including Mark Gurman and Digitimes and Ming-Chi Kuo, they've been building them.
And
they've been buying screens from Samsung or Sony, and you know, they've been actually making them.
Yeah. Honestly, well,
I'm certain that they already have some in the field. I'm sure that they have some trusted developers who already have them, so that during this presentation next week, they can do the almost traditional. And now we gave some hardware to our friends at something and like to invite them on to show you what they were able to accomplish in such a quick turnaround.
They can say.
So
that's, by the way, the other problem with selling these, which Microsoft learned and Meta learned, is it's really impossible to demo them.
Yeah.
Because it's an experience. Exactly. It's not on, you can't see it on a 2D screen.
Hard to imagine how this goes in an Apple store too, right?
And Microsoft had HoloLens in the Microsoft stores and said, come on in. They were in the back and they invited everybody to try them because it's the only thing you can do.
Yeah, you have to do it, but it's going to be hard. But I think we are arguing in some ways over a marketing point, because I think the price, if it's a $3,000 product, it's going to limit who buys it, regardless of whether they call it a developer product or not. There's no evidence. I thought for a long time that they just call this a developer preview, right? There's no evidence that they're going to do that. I think they know there are enough people out there who will buy it, regardless of it being a 1.0 piece of hardware with very little software for it, for $3,000, because they just want to have it. And so I think that that's the thing where they're going to, my suspicion is they're going to say it is for early adopters and developers, but they're not going to do the thing where they say it's just for developers and you have to return it to us or anything like that. Yeah. I think they're just going to sell them.
I don't think you're going to have to return it, but I do think that they may require you to be a developer. You have to remember there's 30 million developers, registered developers with Apple. So there's still a pretty big market for them just to sell it into that market.
Actually, they may make
you... you may have to put your $99 in to buy it or whatever. They may make you jump over that hump more for optics than anything else. They don't want another $100. They just want the optics of this is the developer version. Yeah. You buy the developer version, you're free to buy this device. And people who are going to pay $3,000 will pay $3,100 without any real issue there. I think that the I do think that they'll sell as many as they can make. And there'll be a lot of people that buy them and leave them in the box. Like they're just going to leave them shrink wrapped in the box. These are going to be the collector versions of these. I bet you 100 to 500,000 will just go into people's I just want one stuck in there because this is going to be. I think that people are going to be pretty excited about it. It'll either be an epic failure or an epic. But both Jason and I still have our cubes. I have my cube right there.
Mm-hmm. I had a cube. I foolishly gave it away. I wish I still had it.
So anyway, we all, even if it doesn't work out perfectly, yeah. we all like to keep them around. So I think that it's going to be, I do think that I think they'll show hundreds of partners, not like 10 partners or 5 partners. They're going to show a lot of partners.
They'll have a screen with a lot of logos.
Well, I think they're going to show a lot of actual use cases. They won't show hundreds of use cases.
So Mark Gurman tweeted a lot of things 2 weeks ago that Hideo Kojima, who created Metal Gear Solid and Death Stranding, was spotted at Apple Park. I've also seen rumors, and he mentions that No Man's Sky for the Mac, which was announced last year but has not come out. There's some thinking maybe No Man's Sky, there is a VR version on the PC side, might come out with this. I tell you what, if I could play Metal Gear, if I could be a mech in one of these, I might wear a nerd helmet. I might. They'd have to solve the movement issue, though. That's the problem.
I don't know, though. It's just games cost so much money to develop. Are you going to really put the resources in to target it towards a really evolving sort of
market? This is the problem. No one knows what this market is.
Yeah, you're right.
So I think Apple will show productivity. Microsoft has shifted to productivity. I don't know if that was the right thing to do, as has Meta, by the way.
Yeah.
They might show social. They might show gaming. Gaming is the only thing that's done well so far.
Well, and remember that Apple has our Apple Arcade. They can fund their own games without breaking any of their own internal rules about what they give money to and what they don't. They can just say, we're going to have someone develop this game and put it into the arcade as well. So Apple Arcade can be something that they can take the risk away from developers to develop for. So it could be.
I expect to do that. You know who believes Apple's going to release a headset? Meta. This week they put out the Oculus 3 just to say, wait a minute, hold on there.
Yeah.
Hold on.
They got it to Mark Gurman, who doesn't say where he got it, but it's very clear he got it from Meta.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This week Mark, you've had a day to fix that. Come on. I get it. I go hands-on with Meta's yet-to-be-announced Quest 3 and explain how it may be the biggest challengers to Apple's headset. They're talking about how thin and light the Quest 3 is. Not what we're hearing about the Apple nerd helmet.
Also remember that the Quest 2 exists.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They've been.
I have a Quest Pro. I was not overwhelmed by it. It wasn't worth the $1,600 I paid for it. It's still not worth the $1,000 they're charging these days for it.
That's why I've already seen some like maybe clickbaity coverage and hot takes saying, oh, well, the real thing is from Apple isn't going to come until 2024. But when it does, Apple's going to run the table. They're going to own this category. And that's very possible given that given how much trust they've built up with people buying Apple products, maybe maybe even spending a little extra for Apple products and how good their developer channel is. But nonetheless, all of that is based on the idea that Apple has a specific vision that is going to be flexible enough to cover anything anybody wants to do with it. It's possible that Meta or some other producer that we haven't even heard of yet is going to not be the 90% of the marketplace, but be really, really successful against Apple by virtue of the fact that, look, we're not going to handcuff you. We're not going to make sure that, oh, well, you have to use iCloud for syncing. Well, but I don't, my app doesn't use files. Well, you still have to use iCloud for file syncing or else we won't approve you. So there's still a lot of variables coming in here.
One thing that's interesting, at least when I read between the lines of Gurman's, post, is the focus on, mixed realities. He talks about the video pass through performance. He says it will be close to that of the Apple device, which will have about a dozen cameras. Yeah. More and more, we're moving away from this virtual reality world to an augmented or mixed reality world where you can see what's going on around you. And it seems like both Meta and Apple, from what we've heard, pure rumors in both cases, are now starting to focus more on that. Does that make sense? Is that a little bit of a pivot?
I feel like the rumor that they had the equivalent of the digital crown that they were going to put on this thing to let you dial it between reality, augmented reality, and virtual reality, that was always part of their idea here. That, you know, you can almost hear Johnny Ive saying, but we don't want them to feel cut off from the world.
Right.
And you can do a lot of things that are, the example I always give is that table tennis game. I think I gave it here last week that I play, like to play ping pong on the Quest 2. It's great, but I'm completely cut off because it's in a virtual space. And the idea that I could flip a switch, and on the Quest 2, the quality of the cameras outside are terrible, but on a good one where I could put that virtual ping pong table in reality so that I could still see if my dog comes in or a cat comes in, or my wife goes to the door and is like, what are you doing? I think that that's way better, honestly, not for all uses, but just the idea that you have sort of this two context switchable thing so that you aren't completely cut off from the world while interacting with
it. I should also point out that solves a very big problem with VR, which is the nausea problem. If you can see the real world, you don't get nauseated as quickly.
Well, it might, as long as it represents it, in because you're not looking at the real world, you're looking at video.
It'll be worse if it's late world. Yeah, if your head moves and then a second later the video moves, that's not going to work. It has to be very instantaneous, or you'll barf for sure.
The other thing is that you could, that when you talk about the table tennis, the other thing that they showed last year was all the collision surface issues, collision surface processes. So you take your phone, wave it around. There's no reason why this device, as you start to walk, as soon as you put it on, it'll, I'm sure, have LiDAR and everything else. It can build collision surfaces out of everything around you. So it's not just that you could be playing in the environment. It looks like the environment, but invisibly, you could be firing things and ducking behind imagine playing, shooting like laser tag or something with your friends, and you could hide behind the couch. That's there. So it gives you a lot of really interesting opportunities. Most of the seasickness actually really doesn't come from VR. It comes from the frame rate. So this gets back into why the frame rate has to be higher range. Disney used to have this. They have had a test in Orlando. They'd bring poor college students in and they would turn the frame rate down to see when they blew up. Because they're trying to figure out what's the minimum frame rate. It turns out it's between 12 and 18 frames. If you're 12, near 12 frames, you're a fighter pilot. And you're 18, you're 16 frames per second, you're kind of average. And that somewhere there you blow chunks. And so,
by the way, I contend that it is not merely frame rate. That's what I think all the headset manufacturers say,
latency.
Because it is the easiest thing for them to fix. It's not just latency. It's the discrepancy between two kinds of focus. The
what your inner ear is saying and what your eyes are saying.
The fact that your eyes are focused on a near field object, but your head is looking at things at a distant object. And that mismatch is very hard to solve because those screens are right here. And I think that's what Walter Murch, somebody pointed this out. And I think that that's perhaps more intractable. That's why they don't mention that.
When we worked on that in the lab, a lot of it had to do with the fact that the latency is what made me seasick. What you're talking about gave people headaches. So it was a different thing, you know, like, so the close frame is, some people get headaches from me looking at that, really there, but the seasickness seemed to be very related to inner ear positions, because they're, for a million years, if your inner ear didn't agree with your eyes, you were being poisoned, you know, like we're conditioned.
The more I talk and think about AR and VR, the more I realize how basic a lot of these problems are. Where there's probably this little like tote board like in every lab saying, okay, are they getting headaches? Yes, no. Are they vomiting? Yes, no. Are they peeing themselves? Ah, damn it, we gotta save that.
Here's a crazy one. People with blue eyes respond to the screens differently than brown eyes. And so it's a funny, it's true. So we have different more problems with people with blue eyes and clear eyes, like really bright blue or, eyes. Have more problems with the sets than brown eyes. It's, no one talks about that either.
Yeah, no, there's a weird thing. And you still have a problem of, you have no peripheral vision. So there's always going to be the question of, there's so many fundamental questions that are only going to be answered once we have these out there, with the understanding that, look, we don't know how to make this. You can help us make it if you want to have this really great game platform, but also tell us like what's making you nauseous. I mean, one of the basic questions that we still have to ask is that, like, when we're wearing these kind of devices, let's get augmented reality off the table. We're not talking about like glasses with clear lenses and waveguides that you can actually really for real see the world around you. Is it more appropriate to voluntarily say, hey, I'm putting on these goggles and therefore I'm entering an artificial environment with some awareness of the outside so they don't like put my fist through a wall unless I intend to do so? Or are we looking at an environment where this is going to be alongside what I do? So I'm going to have cameras that let me see the person who's sitting across the table, but we're both looking at this model that's on the physical table in front of us. These are things that we haven't figured out. And a lot of this is going to be how we decide things as a society, that when we have conferences started and meetings started incorporating like laptops, when laptops now have like all day battery, so of course people are going to have their laptops with them, we kind of adjusted society to realize that, okay, I have a computer in front of me, but that doesn't mean I'm not paying attention. I'm just simply referring to notes so I can answer questions for you or take notes as we go. Cool. So it's still a face-to-face meeting, not through this technology. How are we going to adjust to these goggles? Are we going to be interacting with each other, or are we going to be interacting through the technology? This is what's going to be fascinating by the next couple of years.
And I do think that if you look at, you know, Apple, I think, gave us some hints to this. If you go to the Apple store that's right outside the spaceship, they've got this thing of Apple Campus, you know, where you can look through an iPad and you can look at it, and adds all this extra data to it. So it's a very basic framework that they add everything on top of it. And so you could see how, and they have a bunch of iPads going around the outside edge. I would not be surprised. I wouldn't say that I guarantee it, but I would not be surprised if the next demo of that is you put headsets on and you look at it and you just see it, you know, and you can interact with it. Being able to grab onto your hands is really important. I mean, I was in SGI, had a test of this, I don't know, 25 years ago, where you could go like this. You could put your hands out and go, I want a sphere this big, you know, and it just appear, you know, and, or you'd say sphere, like it wasn't, you couldn't say, right. But it would pop up and you could just scale it and you could do all the things you, and that was 25 years ago. And, but, you know, I don't know, probably a $20 million facility, you know, things do that, but.
I'll just say that the one thing that I'm really looking forward to seeing Apple do is, I don't really care so much about the hardware. I'm sure it's going to be fine. I don't know about entertainment or productivity. The one bit of this technology that I think that Apple can do a really wonderful thing with is simply hand tracking, so that I no longer have to have any kind of control in your hand. Nor would I want to. That I can pick up objects and just gesture and be as make 3D gestures as important as the mouse was earlier on. But even then, now that I say that out loud, how do you make virtual reality usable by everybody, not just people who have full dexterity with their hands? So, God, there's so many unanswered questions here.
And I do think we're on our way to, you put the goggles on, whatever they're going to call them, and you are Tony Stark at some point, you know, like, give me this, rotate this around, but I'm just saying that you have an Iron Man kind of, like, that's what you want to, that's how you want to interact with things as you're trying to think through them. And, you know, being able to just kind of pull things apart and look at them, it does make a difference. Like, when you can pull something apart and look at it. And I think that, you know, I could see, I know it will look goofy, but I can see IKEA giving me something. I put the goggles on and it says, okay, pick that up next. And now do this. And, and they can put on the little digital thing now with half the swearing. none of the swearing, but just half of the swearing that's required to put together an IKEA furniture, you know, but you could have a lot of instructions on how to do things and working with folks about it. I think it's going to be, again, I think Apple has done, if Apple, and, you know, they may fail, but if they fail, it's dead.
If they can't make it work,
I was showing USDZ. We were talking about USDZ in office hours this morning, and I was showing stuff. Then I suddenly realized that we made that 3 years ago. Like, you know, that was 3 years ago, and that was still like, you know, Apple. That was you, you know, doing 3D models inside of Motion, inside of, you know, like rotating them around there. You know, you can open a USDZ model right now in. You can download a 3D model from the Smithsonian and open it in preview, and you have since 2020. So this is how long that runway has been to land this. And I think that, you know, I mean, Apple, I think, was, you know, this is almost a 10-year project. They've lined up as many ducks as you can line up without coming out of the gate. Yeah. like I don't think that there's any. So if they can't figure it out, no one can, and we can all give up and move on.
We talk about Mark Zuckerberg and, like, he and Tim Cook and Apple and Facebook and do not track, app tracking, transparency, all these ways that they're battling and they're potentially battling here. But I would submit to you, nobody wants the Apple headset to succeed more than Mark Zuckerberg, because yes. It validates his strategy and it validates this category. And yeah. I agree with Alex completely. If Apple belly flops, it kills the category. Maybe it'll come back in 10 or 15 years, but it will murder and it dead, because no one will invest. If Apple can't make it work, nobody is going to invest in anyone else trying.
And the crazy thing is that Facebook may just stop making headsets. Like, they're not a hardware company, you know, and they're not a very good hardware company. And so, so the thing is that nothing that they've done has been particularly successful when it comes to hardware. And so, you know, this may be, they were working on, now it's on the Apple headset, and they're like, hey, why don't we just give up and use that?
Yeah. This could be a new message pad where those of us who are into technology, we're like, oh my God, this is groundbreaking. Oh my God, this is what the next generation computers can be. But then it fell flat because of A, they couldn't make a case for general use out of it, the general consumers. B, the components that they needed to make this really, really work well, the display technology, the battery technology, the wireless technology wasn't there yet, and the infrastructure wasn't there yet. So it's possible that Apple is really jumping early, that they're squandering a chance to be to absolutely run the table again, like in 8 years, because they're trying to get this happening like a year from now. And just like, you know, you can't say the word Google Glass without the connotation of a loser. We don't want that same connotation to have to this like early hardware.
I do want to point out, though, and we talked about this on Sunday on Twit, and I own 3 message pads, that yes, the Newton, I guess you could say, was an unqualified flop. But because of it, Apple formed ARM, the microprocessor company. They later sold off their stake and did BASIC and stuff that they needed to create 10 years later, the iPhone. And this might actually be a very, I think it's a very apt analogy that this could be the Newton of VR. And we may be 10 years off from what we all really want, which is augmented reality spectacles, you know, glasses that you can wear on your head.
If we continue the analogy, realize that the Newton was a big success for handspring. It was a really big success for Palm. It showed a bunch of really good ideas.
Yeah.
And then Palm said, well, but what if we sold this for just for half the price and made it small and actually possible?
It was the John the Baptist of computers.
And wound up beheaded.
Exactly.
But I mean, you nailed it, I think.
And so that's not a bad, well, I guess from a business point of view, it's not a great place to be. But on the other hand, Microsoft
has help other people.
I mean, Apple has enough money in the bank to survive 10 years and triumph.
But I do think that it comes down to the performance. And I think that if, as you read a lot of the behind the scenes of the ups and downs of some people wanting to be more wearable and at less performance, I think the design team wanted it to be more wearable and not worry about the performance as much as some of the other teams. And I hope that the performance team won because, because you gotta, I mean, I think that it's a really steep hill if that frame rate is under 96 frames a second, and it's a really steep hill if the resolution is under 6K per eye. Like that's those are you know, par for, I mean, that's you know, table stakes, you know, for what they have to do. And if they don't do that, it gets really hard because it just doesn't feel well. It doesn't, a lot of the problems start going away with higher frame rate and higher resolution. Like it just, and it's just a matter of the, it's, and it is a really hard thing. Like frame rate is not an easy problem.
Is there any commercial
so much data
headset that meets those goals now?
There's no commercial headset that does that right
so
now.
So it's your contention the reason VR has failed up to now.
One of the reasons is low frame rate and lower frame rate and lower resolution is a big piece of the puzzle. It is.
What if people still get sick if the frame rate's high and the resolution's
high? Some people are always going to get sick. So there's some people are just, they have a much more sensitive inner ear and they get sick when,
if you get sick when you get on
a boat.
I've seen, so the Air Force said it's 11% of the population will always get simulator sickness. I just saw an NIH study that said it's about 49%.
I think that in the stuff that we were working on a couple of years ago, it was about 10%.
Well, what's 10% acceptable though? 10% of your, can you have a consumer product that makes 10% of the buyers sick?
Oh yeah.
You can.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, yeah. And no one thinks that that's a stopper.
High fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know.
It's the Ipecac of headsets.
Yeah, I mean, there's a...
Showtime.
10% wouldn't be... That's not the speed bump.
Here's my prediction.
Early adoption or anything else.
Here's my prediction. This is a flop, but Apple will snatch victory from the jaws of the nerd helmet years from now because it will be much like the Newton... doing the groundwork for something that eventually will really be great, but it is years off because the technology is not there yet.
Well, I don't think they're going to have I think them releasing a product will be years off. Like a commercial product is I think 18 to 24 months away.
Even then, it's too soon. I don't think we're going to have the breakthroughs that we need to get it down to a small enough size to solve the issues. Maybe we will. We'll see in a week, but go ahead, Andy. Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't think it's going to flop. I think it's going to have to be, I think it's going to be a success by what Apple chooses to define as a success for this product. The thing is, in addition to what we've been saying about how Apple has $182 billion in cash, according to the last quarterly report, they can keep this going. But the other advantage that this product category has is that if it doesn't do anything with consumers, they can still eke out a victory by saying, hey, this unit is not necessarily making us a whole lot of money, but it is. Our friends in the military, our friends in medicine, our friends in training and education all love this. And
that's what shipping, by the way, that's what Microsoft did. Didn't save HoloLens. In fact, the army spent $1 billion on HoloLens, then canceled the contract.
Yeah, but that also shows you how good that kind of business is. They get to keep getting paid for
that's true. Contract they got the billion
to improve it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think you watch very carefully the language that Apple uses on Monday, because I expect Apple to really downplay this. You agree, Jason?
I mean, watch the language, watch the narrative being built here for sure, because those are going to be the key issues. And that'll tell us a lot about what Apple thinks this product is going to do and when it's going to do and who it's going to do it for and how they feel about their prospects. That's all going to come down in the details of how the story is told, what they emphasize, who they emphasize that it's for, when it's supposedly coming out. Are they going to say that this is the beginning? Are they going to, like, I think one of the real questions is, are they going to kind of break with tradition and say, this is the first in a line of products and sort of promise that there will be more to come down the line that's more affordable. All of these things are kind of up in the air, but I think this is a huge messaging challenge for them.
I think they really downplay it. They say this is a developer tool. It's not, the final product's not going to be anything like this. This is so we can get this in the hands of developers. They can learn about XROS, the operating system. They can learn how to code for it. They can start developing games. Games take 4 or 5 years. They can start working on products for it. But we see this as the first step in a very long journey. And this is not the final product, not even close. I hope they say that because I think that's the only right thing to say at this point.
Yeah, I mean, piggybacking on something that Alex said earlier, I like the idea of Apple saying, hey, we're only opening those for developers right now. So basically people who have $100 to spend and can fill out a form. But the idea is that if they can create this perception of limited access, it addresses a whole lot of vectors that they have to solve. And then later on, they can say, hey, the response and the progress we've had on development of apps is great. We've decided that we're going to open up a waiting list for ordinary people like you and me, to go buy these things. So they'll make a very ample initial run. When they sell out of those, if it looks like they can sell more, they can say, hey, guess what? This is moving much faster than we thought it was going to be. Here's another VR event to show off a new portal that we have to demonstrate VR apps. And now if you want to spend the exact same price as developers, you no longer have to spend the $100 entry fee, the $100 tip to the concierge to get in.
And I don't know whether if Apple is going to be as aggressive as Epic, Epic may get aggressive on its own of taking advantage of the headset. But I think that, that one of the things that Epic has done that's incredibly successful has been the mega grants. People, Epic and Unity were like in neck and neck, and no one knew which one was which. And Epic released the mega grants, and everyone just forgot Unity existed in the developer world.
Will Apple do something like Unity, or will it be Unity should. For the VR?
Well, no, I don't know. I think they're going to build their own platform. I think that if they would have bought Unity, they would have bought it already. And the problem is it's too big. Like Unity is like I think it's an $18 billion or $15 billion.
They need a Unity for mixed reality.
Yep. But I think Apple, when Epic went sideways, I bet you Apple looked at Unity and thought about it. And I think that the problem is Unity, has an incredible amount of technology, but also a fair amount of technical debt.
Right.
And so, and both Unity and Unreal have a lot of technical debt. So if you're building something this important to your pipeline, and I think that what Epic, because Epic, with Apple was showing Epic at every keynote before they got into the lawsuit. Every keynote, someone from Unreal would come up and talk about and show us something that was cool in AR and everything else. And then that all died. And I think that the lesson for Apple to walk away from related to that was, we probably shouldn't put eggs into somebody else's basket. So I have a feeling that, if you look at the development that Apple's done around games, around level of detail calculations, around a lot of things that are there, they've already shown those in developer conferences the last couple of years. I don't think that you'd build those if you think that you're going to, I don't think you build that if you are thinking of really handing it off to somebody else. I think they're going to have their own internal development tools. I still think that Final Cut and Motion are probably going to be part of those development tools for video based kind of things. I think that, they bought into that a while ago, and we've got, we've seen tools, added to those. We'll see what happens when it actually happens. Maybe they've given up on it, but they put a lot of VR tools into it. We have to remember that they bought Next VR, so they've got a lot of things around video development that's there. So I think that I think Apple's going to probably try to manage their own destiny, so to speak, with that. And that's a hard road in a lot of ways because years of development give you years of tools, so it's expensive. But I do think that the mega grants of getting developers out there saying, hey, we're developing this right now. If you've got an idea, we've got money. Like we've got money to have you help us figure out what the next thing is. And we're going to spend, I think the mega grants are like $100 million a year. Apple could easily, it would be a rounding error for Apple to say, we're going to seed the market with $1 billion a year of funding for people. And what really works with the mega grants is that there's no strings attached. They just give you the money. Like you said, you write them a proposal and they just write you a check. I know a lot of people that have been pretty successful. I haven't done it, but I keep on thinking about it. But they just give you the money to work with, and they're not asking for a percentage of your company. They're not asking. So it really is a great opportunity. And so I think that if Apple did $1 billion a year of seed funding that was public like that, they'd get everybody thinking about it. And so then you have all these developers with developer kits with a very focused, like I could actually get money to hold me over for a year. to work on this, you know, and to figure those things out. And I think it would benefit Apple a lot. So this is what they should have done with iBooks.
They could afford
not talk to Pearson. They shouldn't have talked to Pearson. They should have just given book developers, if they had given $1 billion in 2010 to iBooks or whatever, it would have, we would not have regular books in the way that we think of them right now.
Yeah. And they also have a suite of apps that they can start, they can use as a bed to explain, hey, this is not just going to be a game platform. if you want it as a game platform, go to our Apple Arcade where we funded a whole bunch of games. But it'd be interesting to see how they decide to get their chat app converted to VR, but also how do they get Pages, how they get Sheets, how they get Keynote for heaven's sakes.
I think that 3D USDZ and Keynote in the short term is probably more exciting than the headset. And the reason for that is that, you know, there's so many of us that do presentations and we have to we find a photo. And what I do a lot of times is I get 3D models of stuff. I take it into preview because I can open up a USDZ model in preview, rotate it to the angle that I need it in, and then hit save. And I put it into Keynote. That's crazy. You know, and so the thing is that you could be putting it in as you do the presentation. You can have things animated. But even if they're not animated, even if they're just all still, it just means that you can choose the position and lighting of your object with a little drop shadow and everything else sitting inside your Keynote. It's going to revolutionize, you know, that. But the biggest thing is that the size of the Keynote market will create a huge demand for clip art. So 3D clip art that's useful in the headset, that's useful in AR, it's useful in motion and everything else. Suddenly everyone's buying up, you know, at $100 $100 per model or $50 a model, you sell a certain number. If you have a collection of 25 models for $10 that are like classroom models and anatomy models and you know, all of those things, you could see a lot of people buying a lot of models.
Yeah. But it also points out it's not the elephant in the room, but it's something that's going to have an impact on all this. When we talk about what is the wave of the future, obviously it seems to be a fight between in big companies between AR, VR, and generative AI chatbots. And so on the other side of the coin, you've got Microsoft and Google demonstrating their AI upgrades to their own presentation apps that say, hey, you want a piece of art? Tell us what you want. We'll generate it for you. In addition to stuff like the problem with generating a presentation in augmented reality is that everybody has to have that kind of hardware. Whereas given that this is the communication tool for pretty much every meeting and every project worldwide, the ability to say, hey, look, I'm just going to give you some loose notes. Can you turn this into a slide deck, for at least the first draft of a slide deck for me? So as we go on, it's again another part of this. I keep saying this is one of the most interesting couple of years I will live through. The idea of Apple saying, hey, we put all this energy into augmented reality because that's going to be the next. Oh, okay. We don't think that's going to be as big, but we think we can at least catch up in time.
I will say that. I mean, I already, when I do slide decks, all of my illustrations are all Midjourney at this point. Yeah. So I'm really, really good at using Midjourney for all my slide decks. All my little examples and funny images and everything else are all generated in Midjourney. But I will say it's like negotiating with your nephew who's on mushrooms, and you're going, so I want this. And he goes, you mean this? And you're like, no, not that. I want this. And you're like, you mean this? No,
we like
not that.
You think so, outside the box. We like to be a little closer to the box. Get closer to the box. We'll tell you when to get
little, your nephew on LSD is like super creative and super cool.
Love that energy, kid.
But you have to keep on asking him questions for a little while before you get something pops out the other end. And then sometimes you ask it and you're like, oh, that's perfect. You know, so I think that that's the challenge with generative AI right now. But I do think that, you know, I think you are going to get to a point, even with Apple, where you say, you know, it may not be, there's generative AI, but there's also like, I'm building out this thing and give me a chair here, you know, give me a thing here you know, and maybe a bunch of chairs pop up and I can discuss it with the system and throw those in. It may not be, it's creating something out of nothing, but it's saying, would you like any of these IKEA chairs? Oh yeah, I'll take that.
Alex, you think people buy a lot of furniture all the time? Because that is,
cheap furniture.
I don't think that's.
It's the hardest thing to buy.
Okay, so that's a terrible example. Because how often do people use those things?
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about buying it. I'm talking about just using it in your demonstration. So you want to fill out a room.
You need chairs,
and you throw stuff in and bring. So, like for instance,
it'll be great.
It's an easy
great way
to generate them.
But the thing is that, like, for instance, Kinaflow makes lights, makes the lights that you're under, that's giving you that highlight that you don't like.
Am I wrong on that?
All these lights.
No, it's fine.
Okay. That doesn't look any different than it has ever.
I know. I just noticed it. That's before. All.
So the, so Kinaflow makes all these things. And what they did is they put their lights into SketchUp. I don't know if they did it or somebody else. I think I'm pretty sure the company did it. Like somebody at the company modeled them all and added all the behaviors and did all the other things that were necessary so that you could take full advantage of Kinaflow's lights inside of SketchUp. And then we all used them. We all used those lights because those are the easiest ones to add to our preview for showing a client what we were doing. And then once the client said, yeah, we want to do that project, well, we just all rented or bought Kinaflows because we had, because it was easier to do it. So what I'm talking about is being able to add all these objects to it that are hundreds or thousands of objects that you can add in. And if you like it at some point, you're just previewing things, you're building virtual worlds, but instead of building them with generic furniture, like my daughter does interior. Well, she did. She's past Roblox now. She's on to Minecraft. But in Roblox, she was buying, you know, all this furniture. And I was like, I can't believe that furniture companies aren't like just dumping Roblox with their furniture for people's houses so that kids get used to looking at their furniture rather than somebody else's furniture. So,
Jason, are you going to spend the night? Are you going to go? I don't know. You can't tell me any of this, but just if you could, you're going Monday to Apple Park. You're going to be there at the event, at the keynote. Yes. You can't.
Yeah, talk. I'll be there.
You can. And then are you getting a hotel room?
It's a secret. No, I'll be there.
You'll be there. And then you're going to come back the next day. I know you're not going
to
be here.
I've been told to be present Monday and Tuesday for whatever they're doing. And I don't know what that is.
They just say.
No, they don't tell
be here. They could say you will want to be here. And that would be enough probably.
They may have said that, but I mean, it's either way.
You're going to be there.
There's things happening. I'm going
to
be there.
The new MacBook Air comes in a shade of gray that Jason, you have to see to believe.
You won't believe.
You're going to want to be there on Tuesday.
So that's right. Jason will not be here next week, nor will he be here for our coverage, but Micah and I will be doing the keynote coverage and we will be watching very carefully for the language and the wording. And that's one reason you might want to watch that coverage as opposed to just watching the keynote by itself. We're going to really look deeply at what they're saying about these products. 10 a.m. Pacific, that's 1 p.m. Eastern on Monday, a week from yesterday, June 5th, for the Apple keynote. We might, last year I kind of stuck around for the developer, the State of the Union keynote that afternoon. I may or may not, depending on how I feel. Sometimes it's interesting.
Usually some of the fun is, Apple didn't announce something, but look at what they're talking about in the user sessions and in the State of the Union. But now it's like, what could they not be talking about? Right. That would be more interesting than the highlight. Will they put it at the start? I bet it comes at the end, because if they really are like introducing a few new Macs, no one's going to pay attention afterwards. Everyone's going to be, you don't put Diana Ross like at the start of the show. You put her at the end of the show, or else otherwise nobody's going to stand and no one's going to hang around to see the comic.
They always, the rumors start to heat up round about now. Saturday, Mark Gurman tweeted, Apple will start accepting trade-ins of the Mac Studio, the 13-inch M2 MacBook Air, and the 13-inch M2 MacBook Pro on June 5th. Read into that as you will. He says, I am expecting new Macs.
I don't think it's anything.
It's meaningless.
I mean,
nothing into it.
They don't always coincide with product launches, and it may just be that that's a banner day for Apple, and so they're going to hit the reset button on that day. Like Andy said, I don't know why you would trickle out a few Macs just before announcing your brand new platform.
Right.
Like, that's a weird choice to dilute the message in when you could just wait a couple of weeks and get everybody to focus on it.
Do you think that they will say nothing about anything except the Nerd Helmet?
No. Oh, no. It'll be a WWDC keynote, right? So they're going to talk about the new versions of all the operating systems.
Oh, that's right.
For sure.
iOS 17.
That'll all be there. I think that's why the macOS State of the Union, or the Platform State of the Union is what it is called now, might be more interesting than usual, because I wonder if they're just not going to have enough time.
Push that stuff over to there.
To put a lot of detail about what's happening in all the different new OS versions come the fall, which a lot of us really care about. So I wouldn't be surprised about that. I'm going to say it. I would be legitimately surprised if they basically blow a Mac launch by announcing it at the beginning of an event where everybody's just going to be talking about the headset. Like, why would you
choose to
do it then?
Yeah.
Unless the headset is, I mean, one possibility, just kind of brainstorming here, is that the headset, they're taking their foot off the gas of the headset and they're really going to make it a developer preview, and they're going to just do a little tiny bit, and they know when they launch it later, they'll talk about it more. There could be reasons that they want to kind of like try to de-emphasize it, but I think that they're kidding themselves if they're trying that, because the fact is, if they do anything about the headset is the headline, the headset is the subhead, the headset is the first 20 paragraphs, the headset is the sidebar article, the headset is the third article, right? Like, so if you don't introduce a Mac on Monday, just don't do it, because nobody's going to care.
Yeah, we're not going to hear much about the new Apple flagship store in South Attleboro, Massachusetts. It's just, you know, you're going to have to go to the website for that, frankly.
But maybe, you know what? Now I'm thinking maybe we'll stick around and do the State of the Union, because are they going to do this like they did last year, Jason? Do you know? I mean, what is it open to the? It's not open.
It's not. It's a small invite-only group of developers who've been told to come, and then members of the media and VIPs who've been told to come. We don't even know where we're going. Last year, we didn't know that we were going to be in the ring, but we actually were in the Cafe Max, sort of pointed out of the ring, but in the ring building. This year, we also don't know. I mean, I think there's a possibility it could be identical to last year, and we'll all be in that Cafe Max space, looking at a Jumbotron, essentially,
playing the video. Were you inside the Cafe Max, or were you outside?
I was sort of right on the border, because what it was, the front row were out in the sun, but there were enough people there that you went all the way back, and the Cafe Max, it's open air, so they opened the whole thing on the outside, so we were kind of like rolling back into the cafe. It's also possible that they'll do it in the Steve Jobs Theater. It's possible that they'll put the developers out of Cafe Max and they'll have the press go to the Steve Jobs Theater, because if we're all just watching a video, they could split us up if they wanted to. That's the mystery. We don't know anything about that, but it's going to be a small group. It'll be more like last year than any other year. Probably all pre-taped. You know, it's a small event. And then the developers have also been told, and this was reported, to make time on Tuesday for something. And the guess is that this headset is going to take that much time to roll out to people, because, again, you can't really just put it on a table and say, everybody, look, you've got to cycle people through. So it may take days, or who knows, maybe we'll just all need Tuesday to pick up that 15-inch MacBook Air. Maybe.
No, I think it's, that's why I'm asking. Tuesday's a headset demo, isn't it? By the way, Alex, I think your LSD addled nephew did in fact design the homepage for WWDC. It's trippy,
cool,
to say the least. The melting apple. I think if you look at it on an iPhone, there's a VR. Am I right? There's a VR version of this, or no?
There's usually an AR object that they put on these
AR
things.
Not VR. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how I would make this happen.
You got to be in Safari.
Developer.
If your MacBook display exhibits these tendencies, take it right back to the Apple Store for a free screen replacement within 18 months after the purchase date.
It's trippy, man. it's really getting. Watch this.
It does look like a finger being squished into an LCD screen. That's what it looks like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not good. Don't let that happen to your LCD.
That's what everything will look like after spending at least 2 hours with a headset on. Everything is just
What are they trying to say with this? I don't get it.
We know how to make a cool Apple logo.
We could do a rock and roll light show. I feel like Jim Morrison should be on stage singing, "Break on through to the other side."
I honestly wish that the team that does these animations for the keynotes and stuff like that, I wish they would make new screensavers, because there's so many.
Wouldn't
cool
that be a great screensaver?
These things that I would love to see.
Maybe that's what these are, is the frustrated screensaver makers.
Yeah.
They only get, you know, one screensaver every year.
They're not quitting until they get their. Sorry, go ahead.
The Swifties have received their passports to WWDC, the Swift Student Challenge winners. Yay. Here are three of them: Marta, Yemi, and Azmi. And as usual, they'll do they show off what these kids have done. Azmi Jane found out her friend's uncle had to undergo brain surgery. She was a student at Medicaps University in Indore, India.
So she sprang into action, designing her winning Swift Playground to track a user's eye movements as they try to follow a ball moving around the screen, designed to help strengthen the eye muscles. I wonder if these are all going to be kind of, that would sure be better if you could put a helmet on. Here's a 21-year-old Yemi Agassin. He is a student at Kennesaw State University in Georgia. He designed a first-person baseball game. I bet you all of these would look really good in a headset. Marta Michelle Caliendo, 25 years old. She's fascinated with fossils. She's studying at the Apple Developer Academy in Naples. Nice. Is it Naples, Florida or Naples, Italy? I think it's Naples, Italy. I don't know. Yeah, University of Naples, Federico Due. Coding helps me find new ways to express and share that message with others. Her playground is a memory game featuring anatomically correct pictures of dinosaur fossils. She drew them in Procreate, made all the more impressive because she'd only learned Swift in September.
Yeah. So I like those three winners. Sometimes when you have these programming contests, they want to get to the people that are like, oh, well, I got my PhD in age 14. My Swift F is about protein unfolding. Well, give me like someone who has a good science head, a really good creative head, and one who just had, here is my quirk and things I'm really, really interested in. And I'm not the sort of person who would make a game based on fossils, but here we are because of the power and the majesty of Swift coding.
Anatomically correct fossils, I might add. The baseball game designer says he's eager to add AR kit and reality kit to his growing toolbox. I bet you are.
I wonder if they're going to get seeded with hardware. Wouldn't that be fun? I want to see some kids get these.
I hope so. Yeah. Suits. I think that should be part of their prize. Yeah. Don't you? Yeah.
Yes.
Swift Student Challenge winners will be at WWDC. Also, Apple has not yet announced the design winners, but they'll announce those on Monday, too. Is that right? I think they do that every year.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really excited. What's this? Oh, he's found the apple. It's floating over my head.
Does indigestion keep you up at night?
With
new strawberry flavor.
That's cool. Anthony Nielsen has put that on his iPhone and is now projecting.
The sting of the jelly apple is known to be toxic to 83% of all land mammals.
Yeah, get it off of me. Thank you, Anthony.
Vinegar.
Well done. Very nice. Anthony Nielsen leaping into the fray. Anything else to say about my, like I said, I'm really excited. It's always cool when Apple has a keynote. Extra cool when Apple announces not just new products in an existing category, but new categories entirely. They haven't done that since the watch, I think, right?
It's going to be good. It's going to be entertaining and a lot of fodder for conversation regardless.
Yeah, thank God, because feels about it. These shows are really getting scant.
Well, this is the time of year, yeah.
No, right. I'm kidding. Actually, we've had a good conversation. I'm going to pause for a moment to let you gentlemen wet your whistles, if that's what you call them. But we'll be back with other stories. There's more in the Mac and Apple world. But first, a plea, a beg, a respectful ask. This show has no ads. The ad market, and I've talked to so many podcasters and so many big podcasting companies, is struggling. Let's be honest. And I don't know why that is. Is it recession? Is it post-COVID hangover? But companies are not buying podcast ads like they used to. And when a show doesn't have any ads, that means it's out of pocket for us. Unless we can convince you to help out a little bit. So I know we're not Jerry's kids, but $7 a month keeps the lights on, keeps the shows flowing, keeps our team employed, keeps our hosts getting their stipends.
It's a little small amount to pay, but you get a great benefit, I think. Ad-free versions of all of our shows, plus shows we don't put out except to the club, like Hands on Macintosh with Micah Sargent. We put out, you know, occasional episodes of that for the public to consume on our YouTube channel. But the full set of weekly shows is only available to club members. Same with Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott. We brought back Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks, a show again that we really loved doing but couldn't afford to do until the club came along. Plus, great events going on in our Discord. The Discord is the best social network ever. I've become a Discord fan, and we have events in the Discord. For instance, you can join us with the keynote in the live stream. You can watch the Home Theater Geeks recordings. We've got a fireside chat coming up with Floss Weekly's Sean Powers. Stacy's book club is really a great book, right, John? You were really loving the Terraformers. Annalee Newitz's new book. We're going to have it looks like booze soaked inside twit. next month and a fireside chat with Rod Pyle. Rod Pyle's a great example of what the club hath wrought. We wouldn't have This Week in Space. We launched it, so to speak, in the club because it was a brand new show and we knew there'd be, you know, no audience yet, no advertisers yet to support it. But as it grew in the club and it grew its audience, Tarek Malik, the editor-in-chief of space.com, Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of the National Space Society's publication, really do a great job. They grew the audience. They grew the advertisers. We were able to put it out in the public. And again, that's thanks to the club. So if you are at all interested, you can find out all the pricing details on the page. One thing, though. Please tell your wife if you buy it. We got a chargeback the other day because a guy subscribed to the club. I think he bought the $84 full year package, right? And without telling his wife. And the wife issued a chargeback, disputed it, and we had to give him the money back. And then we got a ding from Stripe. It's become a whole hassle. So please don't surprise your spouse with this purchase unless it's a gift. But chargebacks really are can be a problem. We don't want too many of those. So only if you know this is, I really want this, twit.tv/clubtwit. It really does help us out. $7 a month, $84 a year. There's family plans, discounted family plans. There's also, there's also corporate plans. We actually have quite a few corporate members, which we thank you for that. twit.tv/clubtwit. Please.
Communication is so important in a relationship. Yes.
Tell your spouse. It was a funny story. I mean, it is a funny story. I feel bad for both parties, but it's, you know, it's a lot of work, and a chargeback is apparently a very bad thing. I don't know. I think we have enough chargebacks now that we're starting to get, you know, the stink eye from Memberful and Stripe. Stripe does the transactions. twit.tv/clubtwit. Because Andy needs new shoes, right?
Actually, I do. I'm barefoot. I'm doing this without shoes. I'm shoeless Andy during the show.
Apple is shutting down. I don't know if this is good or bad. I asked around. I don't know. Apple is shutting down my photo stream next month. You're supposed to use iCloud Photos instead. I dimly remember this thing called My Photo Stream. It would allow you to kind of upstream as many as 1,000 photos, but they had to be within the last 30 days, and the new ones would replace the old ones. And I guess people use iCloud Photos anyway. Apple is going to say, tell you if you are using My Photo Stream that you can no longer upload to My Photo Stream on June 26th. Images will remain in iCloud as usual for 30 days. And then on July 26th, bye-bye, My Photo Stream. Did anybody use this?
Yeah, this is their iCloud Photo solution for many years until they came up with iCloud Photo Library, which itself was a long time ago now. That was like 7 or 8 years ago. So, it used to be, this was how it worked, is that a rolling 30 days of your photos were available on all your devices so that you could see them or share them or copy them over, like copy them off your iPhone and put them on your Mac via Photo Stream. You could do it that way, but that's what it was. And once iCloud Photo Library came out, and now that they've got library sharing on top of that, like this is just, yeah, this is a cloud service whose time has passed.
Yeah, yeah. There's no functionality that you're losing by losing my Photo Stream. Is that right?
Yeah. And Apple has already said that if you have any photos in that system, it's already on other devices in another Apple system. So it's not as though if it's something that you thought that, oh wow, that came out roughly when like my second daughter was born, are there baby pictures that I haven't backed up yet? If you did anything with them in Photo Stream, it's already in iPhoto and iCloud.
That's so actually really important because you don't want people to lose images. I have seen some people complain that, oh, it's going to use more bandwidth. I can't afford the bandwidth for iCloud. I don't know if that makes any sense. I don't think it's going to use more bandwidth, but I guess maybe they didn't want to pay for iCloud because they don't have enough bandwidth to use it fully. Something like that.
I don't know.
If you don't pay for iCloud, what happens?
Then you need to sync your photos by attaching it to
a computer.
Your computer and syncing the photos that way. That's just how you have to do it if you don't want to use the cloud.
Okay.
Either a corded connection or you could just AirDrop them or something like that.
Get them onto the computer, though, before the shutdown in July. Apple's $50 million butterfly keyboard settlement has finally finally been approved. You know what was holding it up? So there was a class action lawsuit. 86,000 people had repairs on their butterfly keyboard, so they're in the class. They're going to get some money. But there were a few people who said, well, this is only open to people who paid for repairs. I just want money for having to use that thing.
Yep.
I just give me money because I had to use the butterfly keyboard. The judge.
Give me 1/20 of a cent for every typo I made because yes. of that keyboard.
Six objectors offered arguments saying the settlement wasn't fair to MacBook owners who'd never repaired their failed keyboards and therefore didn't get any cash, or that the $125 offered to those who only had to pay for one replacement wasn't enough to cover the cost of repairs. Remember, Joanna Stern, I think, had to repair her butterfly keyboard multiple times. The judge said, no, it's insufficient to say you just want more money.
We all want more money.
We all want more money. That doesn't really narrow it down enough. So the settlement's going to go out, and the 86,000 people who filed their claims months ago, last Apple July...
Dipped a little ladle into the cash flow for about a second.
Oh, nothing.
They just went, whoop, okay.
You may get as much as $395 back to cover your repair costs, but you have to submit, the proof of repair costs and all that stuff. Apple's settlement does not include an admission of wrongdoing. What butterfly keyboard? There's no, what are you talking about? We love that butterfly keyboard.
I thought you said in the keynote that customers love the new keyboard, and you're just doing things to make them love it even more when you change the whole thing.
This is a dopey story, but it's a story, and we got to use all the ones we can get. Apple sued by actor Brent Sexton because they wanted him to get a COVID vaccine, and he said, "I can't because I've got too many platelets." And as a result, they fired him from an upcoming Apple TV series called Manhunt. He was going to play President Andrew Johnson. So it's kind of appropriate that he didn't want to get a vaccine. I don't think Andrew Jackson or Johnson would have wanted
it. Appropriate is being a jerk, yeah.
Yeah, he wouldn't have wanted it either. He had a note from a doctor. The actor's filing a disability discrimination lawsuit in Superior Court saying, "You can't fire me for not taking a vaccine that my doctor says I shouldn't get." Actually, he has too few platelets. Did I say too many? He has too few platelets. It's easy to confuse the two. Apple apparently still said, you got to get the vaccine. I would think the production company is probably who's at fault. It's not Apple here, right? I mean, Apple's funding this. Alex, Apple doesn't actually act as the production company for any of these, do they?
Well, I mean, most of the production companies, though, had a mixture throughout COVID. There were a series of testing procedures, and whether you were vaxxed or not, it wasn't required except for when the production company or the owner of the production company decided that this is the way it needs to be.
So it's the production company, not Apple.
In most productions, you were getting PCRs every day when you walked in.
He said that. He said, "I'm willing to pay, and the union is willing to pay for testing, and I will be tested every day."
And that happened almost. Yeah. You get tested every day. I mean, during the heaviest time, you would get tested every single day. And for PCR and it was just, you just walk in, but they got to a point at the first couple of productions was a little rough. Everyone was trying to figure out what was going on. By, you know, a month or two into it, they had, you know, gotten it kind of sorted out. And it was good money for the people who were doing it. And I think the PCRs were like $175 a piece or something like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's what they were charging. It was costing them a lot less. So it was good business while it lasted. I have, one of my former employees was a COVID officer. So she was busy doing this. And
having had three PCRs in my life, I hope I never have to do that again.
Three per production.
Yeah.
Like it was, like, I mean, it, you know, the very first one, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm doing this. And by the, you know, a month into it of doing these production
after
production.
Does it stop making your eyes water?
Totally. No, you just lean up. You just go like this, lean your head up and you lean your head back down. You're like, yeah, you just sit down. You just sit down and just lean your head up and do it. And you get used to it. And so, but it didn't really matter. I mean, I don't think they were really worried about. They were worried about people getting COVID. Like they wanted to make sure that no one was on set with COVID, and the PCR is the most sensitive. And then, you know, within 6 months, we were mostly doing antigen. Like it was like antigen. And if you test positive on antigen, you'll get PCR test, but the antigen was a lot cheaper and, you know, that kind of thing.
It actually turns out that
no one cared after that.
The writer's strike is going to do a lot more harm to production than COVID did. I think how many months in?
Pretty messy.
How long is it going to last? There doesn't seem to be much movement. Yeah.
It's probably going to last forever because they want things that are not possible. So like, you know, until they decide that they're not going to do the things that they're doing, they're not.
They the writers or they the producers?
The writers can't. They're not. The producers aren't going to cave on that.
Alex, you're wearing your producer hat right now.
I'm just saying I'm not wearing any hat. I'm just saying I'm just being real. Like
the
like
producers,
you know, like
are not going to give.
The producers aren't going to give what they're asking because that would be suicide. And so the thing is that the writers, you know, I'm not disagreeing with the writers. I think that they should keep on fighting the good fight. I just don't think, I'll be super surprised if they'll get something out of it.
That's what a negotiation is.
That's what a negotiation is.
You start in a position and then you have something willing to give.
My sense of it is that there's a few things like AI and stuff, but really the real concern is the writers' agreement, which predates streaming, doesn't include sufficient compensation for streaming. Is that right?
I just don't know if they're ever going to be able to calculate. I guess the thing that I don't understand is how they're ever going to be able to calculate royalties the way they did before.
Right.
Because people only watch little bits and pieces and it's all connected to a larger thing. And it's really,
well,
hard
and also streamers are losing money like crazy. It's not like, or are they? Yeah. It's funny because they're firing people and they're canceling shows and yet they seem to be making profits. So
I don't know if they're losing money, but I'm just saying that the problem is that the person isn't buying. They're no longer going to that show. Like they're no longer going to that thing. And
that network, that streamer. They're not saying
no. They're no longer going to that. They're going. They're watching X number of minutes of this, and you, I guess you could try to figure that out. But that'll unwrap into such a mess.
I'm certain they could try to figure. I mean, Netflix knows, right? The streamers have data about all of that, and I bet you they could do it. But and maybe that's the path forward here. But you know, the bottom line is, as Andy said, all the writer deals were basically made on a scenario where you had reruns on TV and stuff like that, and that the value was spread over time. And now a lot of times the value is only concentrated on the streamer, and there's very little. Here's the thing that people don't know: there's very little disclosure of data. Of proprietary streaming data to people on the creative side from people on the production side or the streamer side. And this is part of the issue is they can't, creative professionals in Hollywood don't even have a way to judge their worth because the stats. So when you're trying to negotiate your next deal, you don't have your deal like detailing whether you were a hit at Netflix, because Netflix doesn't tell you except the barest limited amount that Netflix wants to tell you. So that is the nut they're trying to crack. And I agree. I think a lot of this stuff is going to fall by the wayside for them to just try to come up with a framework that means that, like, if you're writing for a TV show on Netflix and it does three seasons and then it's on Netflix for another 10 years or whatever it is, that you get compensated in a way that you used to. It's not the same, but like, in a way that makes sense, like the old rerun system made sense, because that system is basically dead.
There are a whole bunch of list of things going on. One of them is that it's not so much that they want more money, but their position, or at least their negotiating position, is that a lot of the deals that the union agreed to are based on the fact that, okay, we're going to accept less money up front because we're going to be making, you're going to be giving us a lot more money in the future, not anticipating that, in addition to everything that that Jason said, that what you've written is exclusive to Netflix or Disney. They ran it for one season. Things are kind of tight. So they're not only not picking up for a second season, but they're also dropping it off the channel. There's no place you can buy it in physical media, no place you can buy it on iTunes or whatever. And so now that's just simply an absolute dead source of revenue. They're also arguing about mini writers rooms, where instead of having a team of people who are hired for an entire development cycle to develop the entire show, the Bible and the entire first season, it's like you basically get a few people in for, guess what? You get an entire weekend to break all of the stories for this entire thing with a minimal number of people, and so for a very tiny amount of money and no security. So basically, they're trying to turn this into more of a gig economy than a treating writers like professionals whose work is worth being able to. to live and eat and that sort of stuff.
And of course, everyone below the line is like, welcome to our world.
Right.
The thing is, I spent the last 25 years below the line. And so the thing is that what the writers are fighting for is what we don't ever, you know, we accept less knowing that we're not going to get anything in the future.
There's no residuals for
there's grip. No residuals. I worked on Star Wars for 3 years. I haven't seen a check.
Right. Right.
So anyway, I think that
writers are pretty darn important, though. I mean, not the lighting gaffers aren't, but
hey, the queenship was pretty important.
That's okay, all you're right. Say. You're right. No one craft is more important than the other, I guess. Actors, of course, get the lion's share of revenue.
I think anyone should get whatever they can, whatever leverage they have. They should get what they get. If we were able to do that, we would do it.
I can tell you who doesn't deserve the money they're getting. It's the executives, you know. And I think that it's fair to say we want a little more of that trickled down here.
Yeah,
we're writing this stuff.
Well, yeah, we're happy. We're very happy to learn that Matt Groening is a half a billionaire at this point, because he created this.
He did it.
Absolute fire hose of money for Fox. And so therefore he should also have a half a billion dollars for having done this. And the sort of deal that Fox made with him at the outset would never, they basically, he'd have like maybe, I don't know. Okay. I'm not going to claim to have knowledge I don't have, but you could absolutely make sure that when the producers get together, they point at that and say, must never let that happen again, where a creator of all people gets to become a wealthy people and gets to join my country club.
What do we as consumers of this stuff get? We get kind of half-assed, poorly written stuff.
Season of Amazing Race.
A lot of that.
Yeah, you get reality. You get some reality stuff and
podcasts. Lots of podcasts.
Oh no, that's the. Don't do that.
Talk about below the line.
It's probably actually pretty good for podcasts. Good for YouTubers. It's good for the creators.
Yeah.
You know, because if it really runs dry, the behaviors will start to change again. And so that's what we've seen in the past. So it just depends on how long. The last one was a huge boom for reality TV. It wasn't that it started reality TV. Reality TV was a nascent market that was the thing that they could jump to, and then it took over a big chunk of stuff. The benefactors of this right now are overseas productions, creators, you know, those types of things are all things that are going to benefit from a very long strike.
It'd be a good time to start your TikTok channel is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Get going. Actually, I was interested, Vice, which just recently declared Chapter 11, one of the things that was the nail in the coffin for Vice was the decision to do a lot of TV production. So I was very interested to see that The Verge is now starting a YouTube TV documentary production.
I think the hard part is TV production and YouTube production are very different.
They're different.
And I think they're very different from a cost perspective. TV is really expensive to produce for compared to
this is cheap
compared to YouTube.
Yeah.
No, it's cheaper. Yeah. I wouldn't say that it's cheap. But you're not like
relatively cheap.
I used to be on a mailing list that would send you the pitches from all the production companies. And so you would say, hey, we're looking for a new series for Epic. and it's got 375,000 an episode. And this is what, and that was like a low budget one, 375,000 all in. It's this, it shouldn't have this kind of people. It should have these kind of people. Or this is the kind of thing we want. And it, you would get one, you get like two or three of those a day. And then you got a real sense of how much all those shows you watch on TV are somewhere quarter million or north.
So here's The Verge's, I think, first documentary, Apple's Secret Burial. I got all excited when I thought it was a documentary about Lisa. It's not. It's a documentary about what happened after Lisa was canceled. It's subtitled Lisa, Steve Jobs Sabotage and Apple's Secret Burial. It's a half hour documentary. I didn't watch the whole thing, but it's well produced. It's definitely a YouTube style production, mm-hmm. right? No actors, of course. Some interviews for sure. Look at that Geneva typeface. That's history right there. And then there, and by the way, just if you're one of those people sending pitches to Alex, you might want to note this in the comments. The Verge says, what other mysteries or forgotten stories should we look into? So they apparently aren't getting that same mail that you are, Alex.
But this is a much different, again, it's much different budget. I think that, I'll be honest, I think that a lot of YouTuber stuff is now reaching a point where I consider it.
It's very good.
I watch probably a huge chunk of what I watch is YouTube at this point. And if you look at,
you're not going to see a Succession.
Like Veritasium, Tom Scott.
You're not going to see a Succession on YouTube. You're not going to. It's different kinds.
No, because that's.
What it is different.
It's $100,000 a minute.
Yeah, but like, those are the things writers write. You know what I'm saying? That's where you have great writers and great actors. Is that dead?
I think that there'll be less of it as we move forward. I mean, I think that there's probably less.
There'll be
narrative.
More Marvel. On the one end, there'll be more MCU.
I don't know. I don't think there will be.
Not even that.
There's a lot of concern that that's not viable anymore. Like it's not viable. It's viable right now, but there's a concern that 10 years from now, no one's watching MCU but they're not going to see the numbers that they saw 5 years ago.
And it's expensive to make. So yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So, and the stuff in the middle, the prestige, like HBO is no longer, right? It's Max. So Max. The prestige productions, are probably...
HBO still exists, not only on TV, but as a part of it's inside business. Max. It's one of the things. And they have a budget, and Casey Bloys is still, who's the head of HBO, is still generating that high prestige content. And it's not going anywhere, but I think Alex is right that John Landgraf, who's been the head of FX for the last few years, he's considered kind of the mayor of television. He's been charting peak TV. And we've reached it, right? Like, clearly, we have reached the most television that's ever going to be produced in a year as original scripted content in American TV. It's over, right? It's coming down the other side. I don't think it's going to go away, but yeah, we're not. We're in a contraction era now, not an inflation era.
Yeah, you're going to see. You're still going to see Superman. You're still going to see, Iron. Not Iron Man.
And HBO stuff too.
And HBO stuff. Stuff is not going to go away. And like radio never went away. There's still radios out there. But I think that the hard part is that if I look at the behavior of my kids, they're watching deep library. I mean, they're watching stuff that's 10 years old, 20 years old. And they're watching YouTube and they're playing games and creating their own stuff. And I just don't see, and their friends, when they come over, it's all the same. Like you just see this, like they're watching old Japanese animations and they're watching old films. My daughter's watching Gilmore Girls, and so they're all watching these old films and these old shows, and very little interest in the newer ones. Like we occasionally get into the newer ones, but it's not. And I think that's a real challenge.
Hope the writers of Gilmore Girls are getting paid for that, by the way. What are the residuals for that? Because that's the kind of stuff that Amy Sherman Palladino should be getting a lot of money for that, for your daughter watching Gilmore Girls. Absolutely.
Exactly. Where does she watch it? I guess depends. If she's watching it streaming, then they're not, right?
She watches it on Netflix.
Netflix, so they're not.
So I don't know if they're getting it.
I think they are.
I think they made a deal at some point.
But it's probably a really bad rate, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but she watches it, I think, on Netflix. So I think that it's going to be, but I do think that there's the interest in narrative is it's just hard to write. Here's what I would say is there's a lot of great writers. They're way better than anything that I would ever do. It's just hard to write good stuff on a consistent basis. And I think that
it's expensive.
There's not that many. Well, it's expensive, and it's also just really hard to come up with a story. And, you know, and yeah. I think that
somebody like Jesse Armstrong is expensive, I would imagine.
Yeah. Right? And I find myself, you know, I was noticing it yesterday. I was just noticing how there's a lot of crutches that are used when you're doing a lot of narrative. And I think I maybe it's only because I know what they are that I sit there and just go, oh. Really?
Yeah, it's cheesy.
That's how you're going to do that?
You know, 90% of everything is garbage. I would say that I think that at peak TV, we did end up with more good TV as well as more bad TV. I think that it does scale. And I think what we saw is that when they had to look in the couch cushions to find creators who otherwise wouldn't get their show greenlit, some of those shows were brilliant and some of them were awful. And that's just how it goes. There will be fewer opportunities for that. But my daughter and my son both are, you know, they are not... both born in the 21st century, right? They are not interested in scripted TV. They are absolutely. They use Netflix. They, my son is always asking me for the HBO Max password and all of those things, right? That it's just mixed in with a whole bunch of other stuff, which is Alex's point. It's part of when we were kids, it was just TV and occasionally a movie on the weekend. And now TV's not going to go away. Movies aren't going to go away, but they do have to fight with video games and YouTube and podcasts and who knows what else.
And I think that one of the things that, I remember having a conversation about copyright when I was working at Sony. This is a long time ago, about why are we having copyright last for so long? It was a discussion. And they said, well, if everything was available to everyone all the time and people could just keep on building on the past, they wouldn't listen to the present. And it was just an interesting thing that I didn't really understand 30 years ago when I was having the conversation, but it makes more sense now is that when all of this content is available all at the same time, it used to be when we watched TV, it was just the stuff that came out that was new that was there. And there was all this new stuff. But the problem now is that everything for the last 50 years is on something somewhere that we're not paying very much for. And, you know, I think that, again, you can fall into some really good written stuff that's from the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And I think that that has a lot of downward pressure on new narrative, which I think people are having trouble turning the corner on.
That's what's supposed to happen. You know, I just rediscovered Pritzi's Honor, like that Jack Nicholson movie from 1985, which I didn't see because at the time, because I was a teenager and I'd completely forgotten about, but it just came back to my attention and like, it's a great movie and it's better than like most of the movies I've seen like over the past year or two. And realize that the transformative thing about copyright is that it's supposed to encourage the distribution of content, not limit it. It's the idea that this is why it's just so frustrating that so many media companies have gotten so many extensions to copyright. And
not so many media companies.
Well, Disney. Disney. Yes, thank you very much. But Disney carried
water for all the rest of them. Let's put it that way.
Everybody else, but let's
everybody else clear, benefited.
No one else has the weight. I mean, it's all to protect the mouse, which is slowly sliding away.
By the way, is it because Sonny Bono's no longer with us, or what? They did not renew it again
because of Florida.
Florida.
It's because of Florida. They can't turn the corner now.
Oh, interesting.
It's the fight. The fight because
Steamboat Willie
can't get the Republican votes, and they can't.
Steamboat Willie's in the public domain now, and next year Mickey will officially be a public domain, right?
At least that version of it. Yeah,
that version. Yeah,
That's the only silver lining of that fight is that we might get copyright might slide forward. Yeah.
But that's also part of the problem. Like as I was saying earlier, now you have series that are brilliant series, but the Netflix again never makes it available to iTunes or to the Play Store, never releases it on physical media, and so when they take it off of their streaming service, it simply disappears forever. And that actually there's always been sort of a gray area where. I don't support piracy, but there are some areas in which if the alternative is that this story dies, that I think that the person who is capturing that stream and posting it in places where it can be safe for future generations isn't doing something that's 100% bad. So as I'm fond of saying, so many of these questions only get to come up like now that we have technology that can actually make it easy to make a 1974 mid-range made for TV movie available to everybody everywhere all at once at no cost. That's not a question we had to answer before, but now that it is, it's like, okay, have you abandoned this property because you clearly don't care about it? can you now basically, just like if you don't take care of a piece of real estate for X number of years, it is considered abandoned. And the person who is mowing the lawn, the person who is like putting out the fires there, they can say, well, guess what? This belongs to me now, or it belongs to the public now.
I mean, we were talking about this earlier, but you know, It's Wonderful Life. We only know that It's Wonderful Life exists because it's copyright wasn't renewed.
Briefly, yeah.
It dropped into the public domain and then suddenly it was,
it's not anymore, by the way. Don't
write your hopes up. Movie when it was.
Yeah. You don't see it anymore. thanks to Brewster Kahle and the Internet Archive, because they're doing exactly that.
Yes, 100%. I mean,
what a huge public boon this has become.
A double digit percentage of my video watching is now through the Internet Archive. Now that I've realized like what you can find there, not even necessarily by just taking a slog through the entire library, but just simply a random keyword search. What doesn't seem to be within copyright that stars Mickey Rooney? It's like, oh wow, this is his name wasn't Mickey. He legally changed his parents. His mother legally changed his name because he was such a success in a series of like short subjects based on the Toonerville trolley. Oh, so this is him before he like lost his life to MGM success. This is interesting.
They're starting to save. I'm looking in the moving image archive. They're starting to save a lot of TikTok videos too. They are, if not ecumenical. So good. I mean, it's really kind of amazing. Here's the classic TV section. They have 6,648 classic TV episodes.
You have so many people who just, you know, the people like me who like would just like record 4 hours of TV for whatever reason. And now like they discover it in a box and they just digitize it and simply upload it to the Internet Archive. And it's not just that, okay, I get to see an episode of Happy Days followed by an episode of Laverne and Shirley, but also to see the commercials, also to see the news teasers for the 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock news. It's an interesting development.
May not be perfect reproduction, but if you want to see a 1993 episode of Beavis and Butthead, hey, at least you can,
yeah,
right?
Cool. Yeah.
Cool. You saying play it? No, I'm not going to. Really?
No,
play
no,
it?
No.
No, 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 no. This is a VHS tape, just as you said, that somebody uploaded. Not only of Beavis and Butthead, but The Real World, Nickelodeon, Ren and Stimpy, misspelled, and various 80s commercial and news. Nice.
Yeah, I had a tape for years because until it came out on DVD of Max Headroom from ABC, which was one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah.
And it still holds up. Oh my God. Issues that we're still dealing with today that they talked about back then. And I usually would take the commercials out. But on one episode, I must have been gone or something. And so there are 80s commercials in their natural habitat.
That's awesome.
And it's amazing. I wish I had kept them all. Yep. Cause those old commercials and stuff. Old news breaks are just the best. So yeah, Max Headroom. It's on DVD now, and you can buy them on iTunes. But there was a time when it was just a VHS tape in my VCR.
Yeah,
20 minutes into the future. Yeah. Matt Fuhrer is a hell of an actor.
Seriously, for tech people who haven't seen it, it was on Tech TV for a while. In fact, it is like it's all the issues.
Wow, look how young Amanda Pays is. Holy cow.
Not only that, but it's seeing the future of Edison Carter is a freelance journalist with a camera that can simply broadcast from wherever he is to the entire world.
He's a live streamer, essentially. Yeah. They got that right. There's
without a makeup palette.
There's all the privacy issues we've got about the internet. I mean, the internet, a friend of mine, Monty Ashley, who I did a podcast about Max Headroom with for The Incomparable a couple weeks ago, he said, TV, just when you're watching Max Headroom, think of TV as the metaphor for the internet.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. It's not, they call it TV, but it's the internet is what they're really talking about.
Amazing.
And
it's just, if you place network up, commercial great. Here, they didn't have ads either. That's good to know.
That's
right. Show that.
Well, the ads, the plot of the show is that the ads kill people. So
Blipverts.
Oh, that's right.
And we have Blipverts today too.
Yeah.
Watch any baseball game and you'll see
Love it. Let's see. What else?
That's cool.
If Beavis and Butthead was the price we had to pay for King of the Hill, I'm all for it.
I know, right?
I agree. I agree. The final episode of Ted Lasso Wednesday.
Yep.
Maybe not the end of the series, but almost
season
certainly
finale.
So almost certainly the end of Jason Sudeikis. Really? You think?
Well, because I think he's already said that he's out after the third season. There's been no news about a renewal for season four, but there's plenty of room for the series to continue. So who knows? Could be the series finale. Yeah. Who knows?
Apple labels it as a season finale, and there was always they shifted gears about a year ago and stopped talking about it being a three-season show and started talking about how the plan for the original story ends after three seasons, which is quite a hedge, right? Of like, well, they might maybe do something more. But the truth is, and you see this art imitating life and life imitating art, Jason Sudeikis during the shooting of the first season, I believe, got a divorce. He's got kids. They're back in the U.S. He's in the U.K. for 7 months shooting Ted Lasso. And you can see that I think... This is not a spoiler. This is speculation. It sure feels like Ted Lasso is very sad about being away from his kid. And it wouldn't surprise me if the resolution of the show is that he goes back home. And that would be direct with Jason Sudeikis, who I think just does not want to be in the UK. There have been some reports about that. That said, the proverbial truck of money Apple will back up to anybody's house to keep the Ted Lasso magic going. I want one of the reasons they haven't announced anything, and maybe now the writer's strike will change this a little bit too, but I always assume that the resolution of Ted Lasso would then lead to the question of, would there be more Ted Lasso? Would there be a spinoff? What would happen next? And I was always expecting that Apple would make an announcement like the week after the last episode of Ted Lasso, or maybe the Monday after about those spinoffs and all that. Like, can they back up some money to Brett
Goldstein's
house?
Wouldn't that be a good time to do that? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it may not be the end of Ted Lasso. It may be that Ted Lasso becomes a different show, or it may follow Ted back to the States and somebody else does a show with AFC Richmond and they keep going, or maybe it's the end. But again, I given that it is Apple's by far highest visibility thing on Apple TV Plus, and they are the company with the most cash of anyone in the tens of billions, like $50 billion in cash, hard to imagine that we've seen the last of these characters.
The only thing I'll say is that I really respect it. There was an interview that I saw with Jerry Seinfeld recently. I don't know how old it is. It might have been really old. But he said he got offered $150 million to do another, just one more season of Seinfeld. And he was just like, no. No, he wanted to leave it the where it was. Like, he's like, I want to leave it when it's at the top.
He did
nine seasons, I will point out.
Yeah,
nine.
I know, he did. Seasons. But I'm just saying that there is a certain level of, if you don't know, like, it rarely works when you take out the main. Sometimes it does, but if Sudeikis isn't in it, I don't know.
Oh, even The Office sucked after Carell left. I mean,
it's it is the most ensemble-y of ensemble-y shows. If there's any show that could get away with it, staying in England without Ted Lasso himself, I think maybe that show could do it because they have like 15 other characters they could follow.
Follow Jason back to the States?
Or why not both if you're Apple and you've got $40 billion in cash? But I appreciate what Alex is saying. There are real creative issues here too. And I think the fascinating thing to watch is what happens when you've got a company with all the money who basically says to a bunch of creative people, would you like all the money? And what the creative people do, because I think the beauty of it is if you're Jerry Seinfeld and you can say, you know what? I'm done. This is it. And maybe that's the answer there. I'll point out Brett Goldstein, who is Roy Kent. He is the co-executive producer and creator of a different Apple TV show, Shrinking, with Jason Segel and Harrison Ford. And that's a great show. And that's already like Brett Goldstein already has another gig there as a writer. So like in some ways, the money truck has already backed up to his house. But I'm just saying, I wonder about the push and pull of art and commerce and whether those producers feel that there's more there. And it's not always about one person, right? Like Jason Sudeikis might say, I'm over it. But it's literally all the actors he's been working with, all the writers he's been working with, the crew that he put together for this show. And you do see that sometimes where the star is like really reluctant to have the 50 other people he's working with for the last 3 years lose their jobs because he wants to be done. Yeah.
Does he not own the IP? Didn't he create the character or no?
No, and NBC Sports created the IP. They created the character for a bunch of promos, believe it for the NFL.
I remember that. And,
No, for Premier League football, actually. It was about that was the fish out of water thing. Was that?
Oh, okay.
He didn't understand it. But it's weird too because they came up with a character years before, but when they sold it to NBC, essentially they sold that concept and Brendan Hunt, and so then NBC licenses it to Warner Brothers, who puts it on Apple. It's a whole everybody wants to make more money here, except maybe Jason Sudeikis.
Apple is billing it, I'm looking, as the season finale, not the series finale. So that's believe, telling, right?
Believe.
And a lot of those, when you look about, I don't know what happened with this one, but a lot of times it's a production company internal that doesn't believe in something. And then they go, well, let's see if we can sell it. You know, like we're not going to put it on our own. Like Fox developed The Waking Dead, is that right?
Walking Dead.
Sorry, I haven't watched The Walking Dead.
They do wake up.
They developed it.
But they're only walking.
No, it's The Walking Dead. Yeah. And boy, they developed it.
Yeah, it's much worse.
Bad night.
They were like, oh, I don't know if we can sell this. So they sold it to TMC. Yeah. So it's a TMC?
AMC.
Or AMC. Yeah. I'm going to miss all these.
All I'm saying is that if we get to the, if Jason Statham leaves without getting a good shot of Coach Lasso doing the cabbage patch, like we saw, like in a phone video in the episode one,
yep.
I think that we can say that we've been cheated as an audience.
Bring it full circle.
Yes.
I'll point out that Apple also owns the rights to MLS.
Yeah.
So like, Ted Lasso becomes an MLS coach back in America. I don't know.
Just like you've been saying, if the money is good enough, they can say, well, yeah, if it is true that you don't want to be living 7 months in London, what if we create duplicate sets like around in a warehouse near where you live? And that we'll have a storyline for Ted that requires a lot of green screen work and a lot of this office work and a lot of other actors flying to you. But if we can get you into at least 5 or 6 episodes out of the season.
You're not wrong.
I can still see your eyebrows. Let me put some more money on the stack.
What's
there.
That beeping sound? Go. It's the truck backing up. That's right. You're right. They could absolutely do that where they say, we'll minimize your location shooting and you'll only be in a handful of episodes and we'll... Yeah, right.
Like did they do that with Roy Scheider and like the he was in that Sequest submarine show and he hated it because it was turning into crap. So they wrote a storyline for him where he gets sick and so he gets to do all of his scenes from a hospital bed like all in like 1 week.
I did a movie where we couldn't get the two lead actors together for about half the movie. And so we were shooting them on green screen and we would shoot them with their double next to them. And so they would interact with their double and we just made sure they didn't overlap, you know, like with their hands or whatever. It was these scenes. Oh, all the over the shoulders were over with the double. We had one where they were both in Santa Monica. Neither of them were in Santa Monica. And we shot them 2 weeks apart from each other in Japan. And then put them into Santa Monica and had them talking back and forth. And so, you know, that was a solid 15 years ago. So 15-year-old well,
they
technology.
They just did that with The Good Wife, right? Where two of the actors refused to be on set with each other.
Oh, yes,
and so
yes.
They would just record them separately and put them together. And like it can be done. So, I mean, again, we just have to, how much money is in the truck backing up to Jason?
I like the MLS theory though. I like the idea of him just going back to LA and running having an MLS team.
Yeah,
that would be Kansas City
tie-in.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then you could shoot behind the scenes of the sets, and you could put them into your VR, and then we tie the whole thing.
That's right. And then he's the actual coach because Apple says we want our character to be the actual coach of Austin FC, and please. Like, and they're like, okay. I mean, you basically
how could it go wrong?
What could possibly money, go wrong? Sure.
Yeah,
we'll outbid the Saudis, and you'll have Messi. He's got a couple years left, so we'll give you Messi and.
That's hysterical.
See how this turns out.
And on top of everything, I just remembered that starting in June, according to Mark Gurman, all the official like Nike, like top end Richmond's soccer gear is going to be available on the online Apple Store.
Yes,
so you can order the official like $100 like Banter team shirt there.
That's right.
Let us pause for station identification, and when we come back. Your picks of the week, my friends, as Mac Break Weekly continues. A reminder, we will be here on Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC to cover the Apple live stream from WWDC. And we're all very excited to see what will transpire there. I'll be joined by Micah Sargent right here at this table. So tune in on Monday. And then next Tuesday, we'll be back with Mac Break Weekly. Jason won't be here, but we'll be able to talk about, I guess, whatever it is they announced. Alex Lindsay, your picks of the week.
So we had this company on on office hours, I think not last week, but the week before. They make a program called Phase Plant. And now it's not Phase Plant.
It's a great
Phase
name.
It's a company called Kilohertz. Yeah, Kilohertz. And they're out of Sweden. So of course it's part of the Swedish audio music, mafia, I think. But it is just one of the most amazing pieces of software that I've seen. I mean, it's just like for audio, it's audio, but what it is, it's a generator and it gives you almost unlimited ability to tie. So they were building all these plugins for the last decade and this plugin does this and this does modulation and this does an effect, but you can tie any output to almost any input. So you can say attenuate this with this and tie this into this. And you can create this applies to, and you can keep on stacking these pieces up and then just looping them all together, to build really complex, sounds. It can be music. It can be, sound effects. What got me to bring them onto office hours was someone put up something on Twitter where they had a helicopter take off. Like literally it sounds like a helicopter starting up and taking off, and they were doing it all inside the synthesizer. And so I was like, I got to have these guys on. And so we brought them on, really great demo. And it's just it basically, you can build almost anything inside of it. And they've got some great examples. It's not very expensive, $199 for the buyout, or you can pay $10 a month. So they give you both options. And the interesting thing is that I really like this business model. It's kind of like a rent to buy. So if you do the membership, you actually get, you're building up the ability to buy it from them. So if you keep using it and you get more features and so on and so forth. Anyway, I think it's a really cool app. It's definitely worth checking out.
So it's like lease to own if you pay $10 a month, yeah, and then eventually you own, yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah, eventually cool. It costs like some little amount to turn it over or something like that. And so you get more features if you rent it, actually. But if you buy it, you can buy it. So some people want to own it outright, especially if you just know how to use the app. But they have tons and tons of samples where people that they've worked with, they've either commissioned it or they've gotten them from them, or the people have built them there. And
they call those the content banks.
Yeah, content banks. And it's just, but it'll be a whole thing that's been built for you to kind of dig through, like, how did they do this? I don't understand what happened here. And the stuff is really, it's really complex. I mean, this is
Is this for musicians, for
it's both
filmmakers?
It's musicians, I think it's for people who do sound effects. There's a lot of sound effect stuff you could do, but there's a ton of electronica, I think is more, it's probably less of a, less of a device for someone who wants to do acoustic, of course.
It's more EDM focused.
More EDM stuff as well. But it's, but you can tie those all back to keyboards and, a lot of other things, but you're building all of those things from scratch, all these sounds. I don't get that many apps where I just go, holy smokes, like this hurts my head thinking about it.
It's just kind of an endless synthesizer.
It is, but it's, but without a lot of,
so these are pretty realistic.
Not a lot of rails. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So there's those loops, or are those synthesized?
It can be synthesized. It can be virtual instruments. It still supports all of those things. So you can build them with what they have there, but you can also grab onto them and then apply a bunch of effects to them. And
boy, it's a good time to be a creator, I got to say. Pretty amazing. Yeah. Now, you said you interviewed him. It's not on office hours, though, or is it? Where did you do this?
It is. It's on office hours.
It's not on the office hours page.
Yeah, it's probably because it wasn't this week. It was. I think it was 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So if you go to the YouTube page, you'll find it. But it's not. Yeah, it's not as recent. But it is. It's really amazing.
From Kilohertz.
We had a great interview. Kilohertz is the company, and Phase Plant is the.
I have no use for it, and I'm tempted. $10 a month. Why not?
Bucks a month. Try it.
Just play with it. It might be just fun to play with, right?
Yeah. I wish there were an option to give them like $2 just to reward them for that name. That is great.
I know. It's the best name, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
and it runs on Mac, PC, iPad. What does it run on?
I think it, you know, I only paid attention to the fact that it runs on the Mac. So it may run on
that's
other
all
things.
That matters. This is Mac Break Weekly. As long as it runs on my Mac.
For sure. Yeah, it'll run. I can tell you it runs on a Mac, and they say it runs on, you know, runs a lot faster on the
M1. You know, when I get that 15-inch M2 MacBook Air, I think it's going to be perfect for that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Phase Plant from kilohearts.com. Andy Anako, pick of the week.
I love my Playdate by Panic, like that little handheld. Like I'm still using it all the time. It hasn't stayed in the drawer. One of my favorite games, probably my absolute favorite game for it, has just been ported over for the iPhone. It's a puzzle game called Generations, and it is exactly my kind of game. It's an interesting sort of mechanic where you have this wall in which you are supposed to hang like photos of your family, and when you match three of them, it's basically each generation. You have babies, toddlers, children, teenagers, adults, and elderly people. And when you have three of these pictures of the same generation together, they collapse to form like the next generation. So when you get three infants in a row, they like merge together and become one picture of a toddler. You have a limited number of space. And so what I love about it is that it's not one of those endless like match three puzzles. It isn't like anything like a match three puzzle you've probably seen. It ends because there's a limited number of wall space. Once you fill the last square, you're done. The game is over. You get a scroll. You get a score. So it's not like one of those things where you wind up getting in this sort of mental fugue state of dopamine, and it's 3 hours later and you've done nothing and you're really not happy about it. It's fun. It really is mentally engaging. There are no ads. There are no in-app purchases. No nothing. It's $5 and you own it. And it's my perfect, like, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes of diversion while waiting for a bus or something. I love it.
Just bought it. Scenic Routes or Route. Where do they say route and where do they say route? Is route a southern thing? I don't know. Anyway, Scenic Routes, Generations. Do you say route or route? You say route.
I say route.
Scenic I say route. Yeah. We're New Englanders. Of course we say route. What do you say, Jason?
Worcester. Snell? Leominster.
Worcester. Leominster. Needham. Dedham.
Sometimes route. I feel like I don't say router. I say router. So router. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that weird?
It is weird. But my mother says Warsh.
Yeah, so mine says Warsh too. And I don't know where that comes from. She says Washington, D.C. Hang out the Warsh. It's like, who are you talking?
Yeah.
Where did you get that?
Need Warshed. Need Warshed.
Can I say that my current fascination when I'm watching YouTube videos are the people who put in the word button, they put an audible pause between the two T's.
Button.
Like it's button, button.
Button.
So a lot of people say button.
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 And I don't think it's wrong. It's just interesting that I just say button.
Don't New Yorkers say button?
Button. Button. They say Long Island. I think they must say button.
That's a
button.
Cockney chimney sweeps you're talking about here.
Hello.
Button.
Button. Button me, Timbers.
Button.
Well, cross me buttons.
Well, let's put a button in it and get Jason Snell's pick of the week.
All right, all right, all right. I went McConaughey there. I don't know what happened. There you go. Okay.
Eventually, all roads lead to McConaughey.
All roads lead to McConaughey.
Disclaimer here. Yes. This is a former sponsor of Six Colors, but it doesn't matter because I love them, and they're not paying me to say this.
And we love Audio them, Hijack. Too, and they never sponsored a thing on our network, so there.
Audio Hijack from Rogue Amoeba version 4.2 came out this week. It is the ultimate Mac sound recording and routing tool. I use it for all of my podcasts. They added a wonderful new feature this week, which is a recording block that does speech denoise. So if you're doing something and you want to just sort of pull the noise out, it will do that automatically for you. And just more broadly, this is just an excuse to talk about Audio Hijack. It is so amazing what it can do. It will record from individual apps. It will route them. You can route recordings from different apps together and microphones and route them to new outputs and inputs and live streams. And you can stream to YouTube. You can stream to Icecast, which is what I do for a lot of my podcast streams. It'll do anything you want. It's an easy sort of drag and drop interface. It's got a huge stack of effects that you can put on things. You can record, for example, for podcasts, I'll record my audio and the audio I'm getting on Zoom. Plus I'll route them into a single file that's a low bitrate MP3 that I can post to my members on my podcast network. And all happens with one button. Once I set that up, you just press the button. And it does all of those things. It's recording multiple streams in different file encodings. It can do, you know, take things down to mono or EQ them or like anything you want to do. I do not go a day without using Audio Hijack. And if you do audio on your Mac, it is well worth it. And then today's update just adds like a handful more. There's a parametric EQ. There's the voice denoise that uses machine learning to do the denoising on the fly. Like, there's always more stuff in there. It's really remarkable. And all in it, what I think is actually a very intuitive user interface, because it's all these little squares that are connected to other little squares that go where you want them to go.
It's a beautiful, beautiful app. And as you're talking, the audio like actually pulses in the little lines you've connected between the two. So you know that there's audio going through that little circuit you've made. What I love about it is that it's one of those great values in software where there are a lot of apps that are just, hey, look, you can record stuff off of Safari, or hey, you can record between two microphones or USB. This is, no matter what you want to record in whatever situation, it'll let you, you can do it, and it's easy to figure out. Like when I'm normally recording my Google podcast, it's usually I have to record my local audio. I have to record backup audio of both our combined conversation with my partner and a backup of my partner's conversation in case her audio goes bad. And that was easy to put together. Yeah. And then when it's like, oh, actually a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to play some audio from a web browser as we're having this conversation. And it's very easy. Okay. Just drop in this as a source, add the pipeline here. So that now it goes to this recording, but not, so I'm recording like four things at the same time, but each of them is different parts combined together. And what I'm saying is that no matter what you want to do, you can have it will give you a solution to it. It's that flexible.
Yeah. Love. In fact, one of my favorite uses of it is in a multi microphone recording. You don't always have like great confidence in like, I've got an interface with four microphones attached to it, but like, I want all the recordings separate. I did this back at IDG. We set up our podcast studio, and I wanted to create a big red button people could push in order to record all the microphones. And I didn't want them to have to say file names. I didn't want to have to add inputs into Logic or GarageBand. I didn't want any of that. I literally wanted them to have a button to push. And that was an Audio Hijack session that just had each of the microphones that was in the studio recording to a file that was saving to the right place. And it didn't matter if you had two people or three people or four people, it would just record everything and you could sort it out later. And like, that's the power and simplicity of something like Audio Hijack.
And the only warning I have is that you're going to go to buy it and you're going to see it by itself. And you're going to see it bundled with Loopback. Just buy the bundle.
You should buy. You're right. Loopback is the other part of this, which is it creates virtual inputs and outputs on your Mac. And with those two things, everything I do is possible with live streaming and all of that, because that's the missing piece in Audio Hijack is Loopback. I have this. Actually, here's a Discord thing that I do. I stream a podcast that I do for Six Colors members to Discord. And we were like really frustrated with how audio stages work in Discord. And I realized all I need to do is set my microphone in Discord to be Loopback and have Audio Hijack's output of our conversation that I'm recording to post later also go to Loopback, and that's it. At that point, both of our voices just go into there. Dan Morin doesn't need to connect to Discord and get his microphone input right. Like, we just forget it. Just use Loopback and Audio Hijack, and they work well together. So thank you for mentioning it, Alex.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we have so many copies of both of those.
I know.
So many. Same. And so across, just keep on adding them to computers and so on and so forth. But the thing we learned was we were buying mostly Loopback, but then we just eventually needed Hijack for something. And so it's just, they are core apps. I mean, these are apps that you have to own if you're doing podcasting, audio, that type of thing. If you're doing it by yourself, I mean, if you have a big production, you might have a bunch of hardware, but if you're doing what we do, so key.
Yeah. And I checked the statute of limitations. This was more, I think Renee might have suggested it more than a year ago, or Andy suggested it more than a year ago. It's like, you know,
we take turns.
MBWPix.com. Like, you wait a year and then you're like, there was an update. We can talk about
because it just came out with the update. So that's, you know, although I do note that on their page is thanks Mac Break Weekly for saying it is one of the greatest Mac apps ever. Highest recommendation. One of the greatest pieces of Mac software that's ever been written. That sounds like Andy maybe saying that. I don't know. Anyway, version 4.2.
I don't hide my love under a bushel.
No, you don't. Version 4.2 is out. Audio Hijack from Rogue Amoeba.
Everyone agrees it's the best. And you know, if we had Audio Hijack running right now, we could remove the sound of that jackhammer coming from next door.
Ah, that's what that is. I thought it was just a power cord from the guitar that somebody's playing.
It does. I'm using the synthesizer right now to simulate.
Okay, good.
To simulate.
Just make sure it wasn't me.
It's not you.
Not that I could do anything, because somebody who's burly enough to operate a jackhammer is not someone I can stand up to.
Shouldn't have had that burrito.
It's like they're like waited until the. Oh God, I don't know. Thank you everybody for being here. Thank you so much to Alex Lindsay, OfficeHours.Global. Always something good going on there. And of course, you can hire Alex at 090.media. Great to see you, Alex. Andy Anako, when are you going to be on GBH next?
Thursday at 12:30 p.m. Go to WGBHnews.org to listen to it live or later.
Thank you. It's great to see you. And of course, Jason Snell, sixcolors.com/Jason. He does so many things. Many things.
There are links to most of them at Six Colors, so you can get them there. And Leo, might I recommend the speech denoise plugin for Audio Hijack?
And we'll take a out.
Could be.
Oh, Lord. We do so Mac great. Break Weekly every Tuesday. Every Tuesday from 11 a.m.
Worship the Hypnotoad.
On, that would be 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. You can watch us do it live. Live audio and video streams are at live.twit.tv. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show at twit.tv/MBW. There's a YouTube channel dedicated, devoted, entirely owned by Mac Break Weekly. There's also, of course, your favorite podcast player, which almost certainly has Mac Break Weekly available for subscription. It will cost you nothing, and yet will deliver so much goodness. Thank you all for being here. Now, get back to work, because break time is over. Bye-bye.
It's midweek, and you really want to know even more about the world of technology. So you should check out Tech News Weekly, the show where we talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news.
It's the biggest news. We talk with the people writing the stories that you're probably reading. We also talk between ourselves about the stories that are getting us even more excited about tech news this week.
So if you're excited, well, then join us. Head to twit.tv/TNW to subscribe.